Acme is making your grocery shopping easier than ever. Download the Acme mobile app to find digital deals, earn reward points, or shop for delivery or pickup. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news update with Kathy Romano.
Today is Tuesday, August 25th. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. In the news this morning, the first of two tropical storms heading towards Louisiana has made landfall. Marco made landfall near the mouth of the Mississippi River Monday evening around 7 p.m. with maximum sustained winds of 40 miles per hour, according to the National Hurricane Center. Tropical storm level winds were expected to subside as Marco moved along the coast of Louisiana over the course of the night, though the heavy rains were forecasted along portions of north central Gulf Coast through the night. Hurricane warnings were discontinued for the Louisiana coast as the storm continued to weaken. A tornado watch remained in effect for portions of Florida, the Panhandle, and southwestern Georgia until midnight. Flash flood watches also remain in effect for Mobile, Alabama, and the central Florida Panhandle. Laura, a different storm, is just 48 hours behind Marco. That's a tropical storm, and it continued to batter portions of Cuba Monday with heavy rains and areas of flash flooding. It strengthened slightly from Monday afternoon with maximum sustained winds of 65 miles per hour. A tropical storm warning was issued for the Florida Keys as Laura passed through Monday night. Once Laura emerges over the Gulf of Mexico Monday night, environmental conditions, they're saying, could become favorable for possible rapid intensification. Laura could become a Category 3 hurricane on Tuesday and into Wednesday with winds over 100 miles per hour.
Is everyone having trouble not yelling out Polo when Marco is mentioned every time? Every freaking time.
There's a crowd fund to try to change Laura's name to Marco because Polo is coming up. And so they haven't been able to make it official, but people want to change Laura to Polo.
Yeah. As of now, landfall looks like it will be somewhere between southeast Texas and southwest Louisiana late Wednesday night. Threats of Laura include damaging winds, deadly storm surge, and rain causing some flooding. A hurricane watch is in effect for parts of Texas and Louisiana, and then also a storm surge watch is in effect as well. Temple University opened campus for its first day of fall semester classes on Monday, but not without protests from some students and faculty members. The Temple Association of University Professionals gathered a group of students and staff to demand the Board of Trustees to switch to online classes only. One student said, based on what she saw over the weekend with several off-campus parties, she does not feel safe. While the group was protesting for online classes, all online classes Monday morning at Temple had to be canceled after the video conferencing platform Zoom experienced a nationwide outage. Zoom said it resolved the issue, but not before schools and universities across the country had to cancel a slew of classes for the day. A Temple spokesman said he's glad the university had an in-person option. Otherwise, no one would have had class that morning. Temple has safety measures it developed with the city to make the campus life safe. Only about a third of the students are actually on campus. Classrooms have been spread out, and it has an entire residence hall that will be for students who need to quarantine. Every student who moves into our residence hall has to be tested. Those who come up positive have the choice. They can either move home for 2 weeks until it's clear for them to come back, or they have housing for them here on campus they can take advantage of, said a Temple spokesman. The university has also a COVID-19 count dashboard. As of Monday morning, it reported 10 students that had tested positive for the virus. A woman who police say was caught on live video punching a lector in the face during Sunday Mass at the Cathedral Basilica of Saints Peter and Paul is now in custody. The incident occurred in the 11 a.m. Mass at the Catholic Church on Ray Street. About 32 minutes into the Facebook live video of the Mass, a woman dressed in a green tracksuit punches a church reader twice in the face before walking away.
Did you guys see this footage? Wild. It like comes out of nowhere.
See her like standing off the side. I thought she had something to do with the Mass at first when I'm watching it.
Yeah, she's kind of like waiting for her. Yeah. And she was like, bam, bam. And then, you know, walked away nonchalant. And then the lady who got punched in the face kind of walked away nonchalant.
I was wondering if it was part of the new Mass that there's a brawl when you leave the altar. But yeah, it seems so.
It was so bizarre that, I mean, there's only like two things that it could have been. Either they knew each other and there was something going on there, or that lady was just crazy.
Impractical jokers,
yeah.
The punishment is you have to go into active church services and punch the lector in the face.
It could be. It's very weird footage.
Archbishop Nelson Perez said the lector received immediate help from cathedral staff members off camera and is doing well after receiving medical treatment. Such behavior is unacceptable at all times, especially within the confines of a church building and during the celebration of a holy mass. Archbishop Perez wrote in a statement, police identified the suspect who was later taken into custody. She has not yet been charged, but police say that they continue to investigate. In sports this morning... The Sixers fired head coach Brett Brown. General manager Elton Brand met with Brown on Sunday night in Orlando and conducted exit interviews with players before traveling back to Philadelphia after the Boston Celtics completed a four-game sweep in their first-round series. Brown is still owed several million dollars on the remainder of his contract. The team's plan for head coach will focus on LA Clippers assistant Ty Lue, who won a championship in 2016 as the Cleveland Cavaliers head coach. Another possible candidate the Sixers are expected to interview is Villanova two-time national champion coach Jay Wright. The Flyers lost to the New York Islanders in game one of their second-round matchup in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Islanders scored twice in the third period to blow open a close game before scoring an empty netter on their way to a 4-0 win. Carter Hart made 25 saves in absorbing the loss as the Islanders shut out the Flyers in a postseason game for the first time in the playoff history between the clubs. The two teams are back at it tomorrow afternoon for game two in Toronto. The puck drops at 3 o'clock, and the Phillies had an off day yesterday and continue their road trip this week with a three-game series in Washington against the Nationals. Jake Arrieta will get the start tonight, and game time is set for 6:05. And that's what I have for you this morning.
All right, thank you very much, Kathy. Welcome you to a Tuesday morning. Had yesterday off, but we are back at it in fine form because we have some stuff to give to you and some guests on the program. So let me give you a little rundown of what's going on. We have a Metallica and San Francisco Symphony S&M2 box set and custom Metallica S&M2 logoed violin.
What?
Yeah, it's our Word of the Week prize. Did you see the picture of this thing?
I did not.
It's badass. Huh. It is so cool. The violin is very...
They're expensive.
Very rock and roll looking, as you can imagine. And it comes in the case. It's really a cool setup. So if you're a Metallica fan, this is going to be one that you will proudly... Well, you'll either learn how to play the violin or you hang it on the wall or whatever. It's pretty awesome. So we're giving that away for the Word of the Week prize.
Oh, wow.
So,
we're looking at a picture of it in the studio
isn't that
here.
Cool?
That's awesome.
Yeah, so make sure you keep track of the letters. There's only four letters to keep track of this week. We have a number of people on the program today. Busy day today. Joey Fatone will be joining us this morning, and he has the show Common Knowledge. It's a game show on the Game Show Network.
Yeah, it sounds cool. We were just talking about boy bands with the top 100 boy band songs of all time, so he's pretty relevant.
We'll talk to him, and also Mr. Skin is actually going to be on the show. And not now we will, I'm sure, talk about nudity in TVs and movies and so on, but he is actually in a movie. It's called A History of Nudity in Movies.
It's actually his movie. I was reading about
it.
So he's executive producer.
I had no idea.
And it goes all the way back to the nudies of the 20s.
That's awesome.
And up to now. It's a legitimate film.
So we'll talk to Mr. Skin, and then we're going to talk to Michael Barkan, because as Kathy was just saying, Brett Brown was fired.
Yeah.
The Flyers just got shellacked yesterday. but they're in playoffs. It's playoff hockey, so we'll talk to Michael about that. And then... had no idea this was coming together until just a couple of minutes ago. I had recently given Casey a list of just some character actors, some people that have played either iconic roles or have had a number of, hey, I know that guy, roles. And Casey's starting to have these interviews trickle in. And we have a gentleman by the name of George Weiner on the show this morning. George Weiner has been in a couple of very notable roles. One of them, and my kids are going to die. I'm going to have to call him in a little while and tell him we're having him on this morning. In Spaceballs, he's Colonel Sanders.
Yes.
Awesome.
Preston. Yeah.
Chicken.
What? He, and I just found this out, he's at least in one episode of The Umbrella Academy this season.
I was reading that, and I can't wait to talk to him about that as well. And also, he's in Fletch.
Wildcats.
He's the lawyer that is dating his ex-wife, and then eventually, I guess, they end up getting married. He's in Wildcats?
Wildcats. He's in a... You look at his list of credits, it's huge.
Yeah. I love people like this.
He's been in everything.
Yeah, so we'll spend some time talking to... George Weiner later on this morning. He's also in The Postman, another movie that I like, Steve, which is cool.
All the President's Men.
So he'll be on around 10 o'clock. And, man, can you get some stories out of people like that. So looking forward to talking to him. And on top of all that, it's a Tattoos Day. We have a chance for you to win a $350 gift certificate for Floating World Tattoo and Piercing, which you're going to find on South Street in Philadelphia, 1729 to be specific. And all you have to do is text word tattoo to 39333 right now. We will randomly choose someone amongst all those texts to win a $350 gift certificate. All right, it's a pretty sweet deal. So Tattoos Day, get on board. Let's make sure that you have a stake in that, and maybe you'll end up winning. And we welcome the triumphant return of Kathy Romano.
Yay!
Thank you.
Oh, and it's her birthday today.
Yay!
Thank you.
You know, it's like a false start last week because you came in.
Seriously?
And then you had to go back out again.
Yeah, one day, right?
Yeah.
One day.
Yeah. And then you realized you'd made a critical error by coming back in.
Terrible mistake. Yeah, it was bad. And let me say, because I can't tell you how many people think I have COVID. I did not have COVID.
No,
right.
She had something gonorrhea. More fun.
Yeah,
gonorrhea.
Yeah.
You know, she was in the service.
All right, well, we'll find out about Kathy and shed light on her birthday a little bit more as we get a little bit more time, because I have a lot of stuff to get to in the entertainment report. Kathy, you share birthdays with tons of celebrities.
Well, and you know what? It used to be with Regis, but he passed away, and I know you don't usually do that.
Happy birthday, Kathy.
Yeah, he's thrilled that it's your birthday. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back in just a moment. Make sure you stay with us. We got a lot going on this morning, and we want you on board.
Not only can you hear Preston and Steve, you can see them too. Check out the Weekly Rush on Xfinity On Demand. New episodes, you guessed it, weekly.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Let's give some away. Got a $50 Rita's gift card for the stupid question. Thank you to Chris Brugger. I'm not sure how you pronounce the last name, who emailed me in a question. He is from Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Huh.
Listens to us there. And I verified his answer. And here is the question. What actor is the first to be nominated for and win posthumously the Academy Award for Actor? All right, so best actor, who's the first person to win that award posthumously?
I remember it was a very chilling acceptance speech.
They were dead.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, 215-263-WMMR. Let's see if you know the answer. I'll go through some birthdays today, and there is a whole host of them on Tuesday, August 25th. We'll start with a big one and a milestone for this gentleman. Mr. Sean Connery turns 90 years old today.
It's funny you bring up his name. Because I just did a search on him. You have not seen him in public. I haven't seen really any pictures of him out and about. I know he's an avid rock climber, and I'm sure. I think he wanted to climb the Devil's Tower for his 90th.
Ah.
But he's, for me, the greatest Bond of all time.
And a host of other things outside of that particular character. I mean, movies like, The Hunt for Red October and
Untouchables.
Untouchables, yeah.
So good. And in fact, he won the Oscar for that, Best Supporting Actor.
No kidding.
Yeah.
He hasn't really acted since 2003. He was in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and he's done some voice work since then. But
I like that League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah, that's an Alan Moore.
It's one of my favorites. Yeah, yeah. So the great Sean Connery, Sir Sean Connery, celebrates his 90th birthday. Does Beth still have a cat named Mr. Sir Sean Connery?
Yes, she does.
Our former video worker here. Literally, that's the cat's full name, Mr. Sir Sean Connery. I love that.
It's funny, if you watch early on in the, like, Dr. No, when he was early, on in the James Bond portrayal, it was very much like this. Now, his speech pattern has degenerated so dramatically.
He does the most annoying movie-eating scene I think I've ever witnessed, which is in Hunt for Red October.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll give us one chance in three. So happy 90th to him. Tim Burton has his birthday today, the great director. He's 62. He's done everything from this, the Pee-wee's Big Adventure to Edward Scissorhands, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Coraline.
He reset Batman.
Before Christmas, all that stuff.
Yeah. He's directed three of my favorite movies, the original Batman, Big Fish, and Ed Wood.
He's 62 today. Billy Ray Cyrus. Yes, that. Billy Ray Cyrus. Possibly the most powerful mullet that ever existed.
Well groomed.
On his head.
Yeah.
And he celebrates his 59th birthday today.
Did he do anything besides this song?
Yeah, he did the it was just a huge hit with Lil Nas. What was the
Lil Nas X.
Yeah.
Old Town Road.
Old Town Road.
Oh, I just realized I can't see you anymore, Casey.
That's perfect.
there's a cat. I guess it's a new camera. Yeah. I didn't realize it was there. I can't see Casey.
I didn't think we had an eye.
Oh, no, I asked for that.
Contact. Okay.
All right. We're good.
Billy Ray's 59 today. Supermodel Claudia Schiffer turns 50 years old today, so a big birthday for her. It's also Elvis Costello's birthday. Like I said, a lot of people are celebrating birthdays.
Good people.
He turns 66 years old today. And still, I guess, he's married to Diana Krall, right?
The jazz singer.
Yeah. She's outstanding. So happy 66 to him. It's also Rachel Bilson of the OC's birthday. She's 39. Let's skip over that and we'll move on. We have a few rock birthdays today to fall in line with Elvis Costello. It is Rob Halford's birthday today of Judas Priest. You can turn off the.
I'm trying. I thought you were going to down.
Turn it down?
Yeah, turn it down.
No,
that's a radio term. Turn it down.
No, it's Rob Halford's birthday today from Judas Priest.
Is that him?
Yeah. Screaming for Vengeance. One of the most powerful heavy metal screams ever.
It is a fun day because usually on this day every year, Pierre will go from a workforce block of Judas Priest into a workforce block of Elvis Costello, proving that this radio station is everything that rocks.
Yeah. And continuing on in that, it's also Gene Simmons' birthday today. Gene turned 71 years old. It might have been Jackie Bam Bam had posted a short gif, I guess, of Gene when he would do the blood spitting thing in shows. And I got to see him do it live. It's pretty cool how he does it. He's doing his bass solo and he has this kind of shaky movement of his head.
Right, like a predatory creature.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he turns his head upwards. He looks up in the sky and starts shaking his head back and forth. And slowly the blood starts trickling out of his mouth, runs down his throat all over the front. He sticks his long tongue out and it's just dripping off his tongue. And
Preston, I stole that from Frankie Valli. I said one time he was doing a show in, I believe it was the Catskills.
Yeah.
And I said, I've got to do that.
Yeah.
I've got to incorporate that into our act. It seems more appropriate for us.
You took it as your own?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty ballsy. But anyhow, and then of course he would do the fire breathing too. I mean, that was really him doing that.
These guys, when they came on the scene, it was like, it's like a hybrid, and especially for like young boys, it was like, it's everything you want.
Yeah.
It's at that time very aggressive rock with the symbolism of these kind of robotic samurai. What the hell were they, you know?
Well, he was a demon.
Yeah,
that was his character. And then you had the cat and the star child and the alien. And it was just tailor-made to be, yes.
Yeah.
This is badass.
Well, Preston, I actually was not a demon. That was my version of what I perceived a chicken to be.
Hence the plumage on
exactly.
top of your head.
You did notice that.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
The chicken.
The grand rooster.
The most understated creature in the world.
But they put on the show, man.
Underappreciated.
He's 71 today. Actor Tom Skerritt. Like I said, there's a lot of them today. Yeah, he was Viper in Top Gun. Great in Alien, Contact, Steel Magnolias. Goes all the way back to MASH,
yes.
The film.
Yeah.
And he's just been around doing it forever. He's 87 today. It's also Rachel Ray's birthday today.
Oh, my God.
Kathy, you celebrate a birthday with Rach?
Yes, I did know that. And I was able to do an interview with her a few years ago. I wish I would have remembered this to get the audio. But her and I realized we had the same birthday. And it was kind of like a very girly, yelling, screaming moment.
Oh, my God.
I think she recently, maybe last week, had a big fire at her house in New York.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but apparently she's all right. You know what? Her line of dog food, her pet food, is really top notch.
It's what I feed my cats. They love it. Nice. And you know
feed
what?
Your cats dog food?
I know, right? He said dog food. No, it's pet food. You guys know, like in the very beginning when we started talking about her, I think it stemmed from when Marissa and I went up to her show to visit her show. She was not the friendliest at all.
She had you thrown out.
Yeah, and no, she didn't. But I kind of had that, you know, in my head for years. And then she came down to Philadelphia and she did a luncheon for me for her story down on Ben FM. And she is, it's just her personality. She is, it was very, she did it for free.
Hardcore lesbian?
No. She did it for free. She came down and did this event for us because she, you know, believed in what we were, what we were talking about. It was very nice. It's just, I think that's just her personality. It's not that she's, you know, not friendly or not a nice person. It's just kind of how she is when she's out in public. Yeah.
Okay. Well, she turns 52 today. Vivian Campbell, guitarist for a few bands. Def Leppard, Dio, Whitesnake is mainly what I remember him from. But he is celebrating his 58th birthday today. I believe he had a cancer scare, too, Vivian Campbell. 58. Also, just a couple more here. Jeff Downs, who is the keyboard player for Asia, also a member of Yes, and The Buggles. If you see the video, Killed the Radio Star video, he's in that and he's playing keyboards, obviously, and he always had like 8 or 10 different keyboards and would run around.
I love those setups. Tony Banks had the same thing on Genesis.
So he's 68 years old today. Two more birthdays. Alexander Skarsgård, the actor, one of the Skarsgård clan.
Skarsgårds.
He was on True Blood. You know what he was in, which I didn't hate. It wasn't a great movie, but Legend of Tarzan.
No, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's decent.
And he turns 44 today, and then celebrating her 32nd birthday, Kathy Romano.
Hey!
So sweet of you to point that
32.
Out.
32.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Don't look a day over. Oh, wait, one more birthday. I'm sorry, I missed one. Blake Lively.
Oh!
Stunningly beautiful. She's 33. She's got a year on you, Kath.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, clearly, I look younger than her.
She's old and hideous.
Yeah. Yeah.
When did she first jump out at you? I'll tell you. Green Lantern. I was
she's there's a scene where she shows up at a party all done up, and I'm like, wow. She is a stunner, and very, very happy with her and Ryan. She's 33 today. All right. See if we can get an answer to the stupid question. What actor is first to be nominated for and win posthumously the Academy Award for Best Actor? And we are going to go to Troy for the answer. Hey, Troy, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good. Troy, do you know the answer?
I do. It reminds me of an Eagles song. James Dean.
Yes, James Dean. Correct. 1955 is when that happened.
Giant?
Let's take a look. And East of Eden.
East of Eden. Okay. He only made just a handful of films.
Sorry, it was Giant. It was Giant because that was in 56. He won it in 55.
Okay.
For East of Eden. Or for East of Eden. And then Giant is when he won.
And then Nerds in Paradise.
Award. Yes, he won the award. He didn't win that when he was nominated, but... All right, let me get into the entertainment report. As Warner Media is reportedly near the end of its investigation into the Ellen DeGeneres show, Ellen plans to discuss the allegations against her and other leaders directly. Among the charges are claims of sexual misconduct, racism, and workplace bullying on the set. And as we've reported, three producers, executive producers Ed Glavin and Kevin Lehman, and co-executive producer Jonathan Norman, have been ousted, and she said in a staff memo that she plans to make changes in the day-to-day management of the show. The Daily Mail asked DeGeneres how she would handle the allegations when her show returns in September. She said, "I will be talking to my fans." Meanwhile, Australia's Channel 9 network is the first to officially pull the plug on the show following the viral reports of the bad on-set behavior. They said in a statement, we are resting Ellen Repeats, and I have replaced it with Desperate Housewives.
So right now, I know she was conducting the show vis-a-vis like, a Zoom link and all that stuff and doing some stuff like that. Is that still going on or are there new episodes or are they in complete hiatus now?
No idea.
Okay.
Sorry, I wish I could tell you, but I don't care. But I don't know, Steve, quite possibly. All right, Steve, this is for you. K-pop megastars, RM, Jin, Suga, J-Hope, Jimin, V, and Jungkook.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Made history on Friday with the release of their new single, Dynamite, as a music video for the song set the new record for the biggest 24-hour debut, amassing a whopping 101 million views in its first day on the
platform. Holy hell! YouTube.
That is correct.
It's like one of your drum videos.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that's crazy.
The track also set the record for the biggest music video premiere when it garnered over 3 million concurrent viewers when it premiered on the platform.
I was one of those viewers, by the way.
Did you watch it?
I did watch it. It's in English.
Yeah, BTS Dynamite new record means it's the first and currently the only YouTube video in history to receive more than 1 million views within its first 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I have to say, it was okay. I wasn't blown away by the way I was blown away by that magical night when I watched them perform live on SNL.
Okay.
When I realized my heart would be theirs forever.
Dynamite also saw BTS break the record for the biggest Spotify debut of 2020 when it garnered 7.779 million streams in its first 24 hours. The track also set multiple iTunes records, becoming the fastest song to ever reach number one in 100 countries with a time of just 8 hours, and making BTS the only artist to ever have 5 songs achieve 100 number ones.
Think of that. Think of the amount of people that had to watch it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, BTS recently said that they hope their new single, which is their first to be sung entirely in English, will bring happiness and confidence to their fans amid the coronavirus pandemic.
It brought some happiness to me. It brought a little bit more confidence, I'd have to say.
Okay, good. Excellent.
So it wasn't a 50-50 split.
I know that's more music news territory, but I thought
it
here.
Is it really?
Well, I was low on stories.
Okay.
Ain't it fast tonight? So watch me bring the fire, set the night light. Shoes on, get up in the morning, cup of milk, let's rock and roll. Kink out, kick the drum, rolling on like a Rolling Stone. Sing song when I'm walking home, jump up to the top of LeBron.
There you go, man.
Call me on my phone, nice tea, and I'll get my ping pong.
All right.
What? It's just like somebody who speaks a little bit of English and Korean decided to write down a whole bunch of phrases and then
rock and roll,
yeah, rock and
Stone.
Roll, and telephone, yeah. And yeah, let's turn this into a K-pop song.
It's your
dough,
standard.
Nuts and pizza. I like French fries too.
Yeah. Well, it was enough to get them
ice,
the biggest
ice, cold ice beer
debut in the history of YouTube. So
yeah, you can't argue with that.
You're doing something right, man.
Yeah.
Let's see. Shaquille O'Neal is going to enjoy this. Turner Sports, and the NBA's most comedic and dominant big man, reached a multi-year extension with Turner Sports that will include an expanded role with TNT's Inside the NBA and NBA and TNT coverage.
It's a great honor to re-sign with him. Looking forward to many more years working with him. Been very enriching. Perception of my deal, I've been enjoying it very much.
Now, he has contributed to the network, winning 6 Emmys during his 9-year tenure.
Okay.
He talked about first getting on board. He said, I wanted to be professional, but the producer said that we didn't bring you here for that.
Yeah, they told me that.
We don't want you to look at the cameras. We don't want the analytics. We want you to be yourself, he said. So once I started following that, I became more comfortable.
We want you to hold this key light. he's part of the lighting grid.
I love Shaq. I think he's great at what he does. He's a great personality.
And he's also, as we said before, the guy is a genius when it comes to business. Mm-hmm. Do you know what he's associated with? He's part owner of the Ring doorbell. He's in what's it, the general, the yeah. insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like 12 different things. And is it Papa John's?
Is he Papa John's?
He's in Papa John's.
I don't know. I would like to talk to him one day. I'd love to have
I'd like to talk to you.
Yeah, I'd like to have an interview or meet with him or something like that. He's a guy, ever since he did that one show where he would take on other athletes. Yeah.
Yes.
It was
this Shaq versus?
Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah. It was a very well done program. And he was a great talent on it.
My friend is friends with him, so I'll see what he can do.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Does she live near him?
No.
Okay.
She lives in the area here, but she worked in the NBA for years and actually had a nice relationship with him.
All right.
That'd be great. If he's re-signing, it might be a reason to get him on. You know,
happy birthday, Kat.
Thank you.
The Powerpuff Girls could soon fly again. Variety has learned that a live-action version
of the classic Cartoon Network series is in development at the CW. In the updated version of the series, the titular superheroes are now disillusioned 20-somethings who resent having lost their childhood to crime fighting.
So it's sort of a sense of humor to it? It's a comical take on it?
I would think so. The project hails from writers and executive producers Heath Regnier. And Diablo Cody.
Yeah, I know him.
The original Powerpuff Girls was created by Craig McCracken, and in that series, Professor Utonium accidentally created the elementary school age super team of Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup by combining sugar, spice, and everything nice with the mysterious Chemical X. The show ran for 6 seasons and 78 episodes between 98 and 2005.
They were very popular. I remember that.
The Powerpuff Girls movie was released in 2002, while a rebooted animated series began airing on Cartoon Network in 2016. So they're looking to do live action. Should be interesting if they could pull that off or not. Actor Alan Rich, who was blacklisted in Hollywood early in his career and later found his niche as a versatile character actor in hundreds of roles, passed away on the 22nd at Lillian Booth Actors Home in Englewood, New Jersey. He was 94 years old. He's one of those guys who's been in a lot of stuff. And
you see him, you know him.
Yeah, you go, oh, yeah, him. But apparently he had a pretty interesting career. His notable feature film credits include playing District Attorney Herman Tauber in Serpico, Judge Judson in Steven Spielberg's Amistad, and television executive Robert Kintner in Robert Redford's Quiz Show, for which the New York Times reviewed his performance as having the gruff assurance of a real executive.
He was always playing that kind of guy.
Yeah, he worked with some of the classics, Edward G. Robinson, Jack Palance, Henry Fonda, and so on.
Marilyn Chambers.
Well, I don't know about that. Ridge's advocacy of civil rights landed his name in Red Channels, which was the Hollywood blacklist. And he actually had to give up his acting for a long time. He wasn't able to get a job. And so he needed to support a young family. He became a stockbroker, eventually opening a brokerage firm. He then developed an expertise in modern art. He opened the Alan Rich Galleries on Madison Avenue. And eventually he returned to acting in the 1960s. And after he was in Serpico in 73, his television appearances, he started being cast more after
again,
Serpico.
Yeah.
But he was on All in the Family, Beretta, Kojak, NYPD Blue, Barney Miller, Happy Days, The Nanny, Curb Your Enthusiasm. So he did everything.
Did you ever see the movie The Front? Woody Allen's movie The Front?
No. Uh-oh.
So that focuses in on that time. Now, during that time with the McCarthy hearings and all that stuff, when they were going after communists in entertainment, or who they perceived to be communists, actors couldn't work because they were, you know, they looked like themselves. But writers would write under pseudonyms and have other people submit their work for them. And that was The Front. Your front would be the person who would submit your manuscripts or your stuff under their name so that you could keep on working. But actors didn't have that same luxury.
Rich developed his own acting technique detailed in his book called The Leap from the Method, and some of his famous students included Sharon Stone, Jamie Lee Curtis, Rene Russo, Donna Dixon, Alan Thicke, and Larry Miller. And he was 94, unfortunately, but the family has asked that donations be made to his daughter Marion's nonprofit Global Play Brigade, which is an effort to help those impacted by COVID-19. So sad news. But 94, that's a nice long run.
Oh, yeah.
Kathy sent this along to me. I've not watched the trailer from this yet, but finally, the documentary Class Action Park is coming out. And it's about Action Park in Vernon, New Jersey. In the 17 years between when Action Park opened in 1978 and closed in 1996, a total of 6 deaths were confirmed to have occurred there. Countless serious injuries were also recorded. Twitter users have reacted to the documentary's alarming new trailer with excitement. One user wrote, "Had no clue I need this documentary in my life until now. Can't wait." Another said, "Oh my God, move over, Tiger King. This looks insane."
One of the deaths was decapitation.
No.
Exactly.
You think that would just be the end of an amusement park. But when you can move around and get past a decapitation, that's right. A special place.
Well, you know what he did? What the owner did was they said nobody would insure him, so he created his own insurance company and insured himself.
That is brilliant.
Oh, my God.
It's diabolical, but yeah. Jesus.
In the trailer, a compilation of voiceovers detailing the events which unfolded at Action Park, including alleged electrocution and decapitation. One person speaks about a thrill seeker being impaled on a bull, while another one fractured their vertebrae. Attractions at the theme park, of course, included the water slide featuring the 360-degree closed loop and an infamously rough wave pool. In a single week in 1982, 2 people died on extreme water rides in the park. And the documentary also investigates, like Kathy was saying,
how the park's owner, Eugene Mulvihill, was able to keep that park open for nearly 20 years despite the numerous incidents and deaths as well. So it's going to hit HBO Max on the 27th. So this week, on Thursday, it's coming out. We may have to talk about that again. I know we've spoken about Action Park many times, but
I mean, even in this trailer, I went a number of times. My aunt and uncle lived not far from this water park, so we used to go all the time. And I mean, I rode these rides, and we would never leave without somebody getting hurt.
Someone hurt. Uh-huh.
Was that usually your sign that it was time to pack it in when someone got an injury?
I'm telling you, somebody left with an injury every time we went.
I'll tell you what, though. I remember as a kid seeing the commercials, and or at least whenever they were airing, I have to go there. It looks awesome.
It looked perfect, doesn't it?
Never made it there, though. Yeah.
Is it just one, or is it a series, did you say?
I think
it's a series. Or no, it's a documentary.
Yeah, I think it's just one.
So it's not a docu-series, it's just a documentary.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, all right, so that's coming up. Also, the first trailer for Showtime's The Comey Rule has dropped, with Brendan Gleeson appearing as Donald Trump. The two-part limited series will air September 27th and 28th and is based on the New York Times best-selling book, A Higher Loyalty, and Jeff Daniels is playing FBI Director James Comey. So that one is on the way as well. Jerry Seinfeld shared his thoughts about who he called the putz, who wrote a viral essay claiming that New York City is dead forever thanks to COVID-19. Penning his own op-ed in the New York Times, he responded to hedge fund manager James Altucher's argument, and he said, feeling sorry for yourself because you can't go to the theater for a while is not the essential element of character that made New York the brilliant diamond of activity that it will one day be again. He said, do you think Rome is going away too? London, Tokyo, the East Village? They're not. They change. They mutate. They reform because greatness is rare. And the true greatness that is New York City is beyond rare, he says. Keira Knightley has signed on to star in and executive produce The Essex Serpent, which is based on Sarah Perry's novel of the same name.
What's it about?
I don't know. I just have seen that it's popped up a couple of times, that they're promoting it, and I don't really know, Steve. The series is coming out on Apple, and it represents her second project with the streamer in the past few months.
Too much stuff. There's a movie that on Hulu. You see the commercials for this Vince Vaughn movie. It's basically The Purge applied to drinking and drug rules.
Oh, what?
So that, yeah.
You can just go for any age, what, or
any
anybody,
age,
any drug.
Yes, exactly. And it's done in that stuff, but it's a comedy, obviously.
Okay, all right.
But in fact, it's the star, Preston, is the son from the last Vacation movie.
Oh, okay. And it says here, it's called The Binge.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's clearly
exactly. Yeah,
it's clearly a riff on The Purge, The Binge. You just go out and do anything illegal in the world of substance.
Exactly.
Goes.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. No, I have not seen that, but now.
But again, there's too much to watch.
Now I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. A couple more quick things here. Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
I like him.
Is loving life. His husband, Justin Makita, shared a picture of the Modern Family star burping their baby, Beckett Mercer, whom they welcomed on July 7th, and he wrote The New Normal. So
Burping Baby Beckett.
Burping Baby Beckett. That
Rubber
is
baby,
correct.
Bubby, buggy, okay, can't do
Buggy
it.
Bumpers.
Yeah, close. Just can't do it.
We got to work on that.
Yeah.
And you know what? One last thing. The Berlin International Film Festival has decided to go gender neutral with its awards next year. The directors, Mariette Rissenbeek and Carlo Chatrian said in a joint statement that we believe that not separating the awards in the acting field according to gender comprises a signal for a more gender-sensitive awareness in the film industry. So they're going to take it out for a spin and see how that goes. We'll see if it works out. All right, now we're going to do the clips. Wynonna Earp follows a woman with unique abilities as she teams up with unlikely allies to battle demons and other paranormal creatures. And in this clip, star Melanie Scrofano discusses the fan loyalty to the series. Here we go.
I don't think it was terribly surprising. We already knew how much support we had from them just by how positive they are online. And they're always, like, giving us the best of themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was not a surprise because we know that they're such great people, mm-hmm. but it was also so, you know, reaffirming.
What the f***? I think, correct me if I'm wrong, and Nick, if you could do a little check on this, I think this is from a series that the comic book company Zenoscope, you know, the local company,
okay.
created, and it's a success for them. The
show's
very
really?
Popular, yeah.
Okay. Winona Earp airs Sundays. That's at 10 o'clock on Sci-Fi. Nick will look into that while we do the next clip. 12 contestants compete in a series of wet, over-the-top challenges in order to win a $10,000 cash prize in Cannonball. And in this clip, co-host The Miz explains some of the simple obstacles that the contestants will face. And here we go.
They have to go through an immense amount of challenges, ranging from our mega slide, which is only 100 feet tall. When you go down it, you're only going like 60, 70 miles per hour. And then once you're launched off of it, you're only going about 80 feet in the air.
I like big balls.
Cannonball airs Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and that is on USA.
So this one seems distinguished by the fact that the challenges that they're doing are really up high. So, you know, they're launching. I'm watching the trailer for this thing, and they're at a higher altitude than most of the other shows like this.
Okay.
Will condone.
I love it. Excellent. All right, and there you go. That's what I have in today's entertainment report. We have a lot today. We have several people joining us, and we got things to give away. So happy day, dear friends. We have Joey Fatone on the program. Mr. Skin will be joining us. We're going to talk a little bit of sports because of what went on with Brett Brown over the
yes.
weekend and the Flyers. Michael Barkham will be joining us. And we have character actor George Weiner on. For those who love the movie Spaceballs, he is Colonel Sanders from that movie, and he's been in a host of other things as well. So we're just going to talk to him about his career. I love interviews like that.
That's what he's coming up for, yeah.
All right, so we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. A lot to get to today, including a Tattoos Day. We have a chance for you to win a $350 gift certificate for Floating World Tattoo and Piercing on South Street in Philly. Text the word TATTOO to 39333. We're going to grab a random winner. Maybe it's you. We'll find out. We're going to take a break. Be right back.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Cage the Elephant.
Call me when you're ready to be real.
Larkin Poe.
Burn, burn, baby, burn with that Holy Ghost fire.
Rival Sons.
We move through the world like shooting stars across the sky.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Hopefully everybody had a wonderful, we had a longer weekend, but hopefully the weekend was nice to you. I haven't said anything about this yet, but there's been something that's been going on in my neighborhood, and it's been happening, for the last half of the summer or so.
You were reticent to bring it up. You have had a change of heart about it, and you kind of indicated to us what it was. And I remember thinking when you first said it, what?
Yeah. So in my neighborhood recently, and if this has been happening in your vicinity or wherever you hang, feel free to call in. But we have been getting cheesed in our neighborhood.
Okay.
So whoever is doing this is enjoying cars that are parked on the street because we have, you know, you can driveway and street parking, and going by and throwing single slices of American cheese onto cars.
Huh?
And they stick.
Well, the cars are, we assume they're a little warmer.
Warm.
It's the
yeah.
summer.
So you throw the cheese and...
Cheese! Yeah. By the way, what is it with PA and cheese things?
Right?
If yeah. you're not spanking it with cheese...
Yeah, you're throwing it on cars.
So it's just a slice of cheese?
Several slices
okay.
of cheese. And so the cheese will melt to the side of the car. Okay, yeah, exactly. So it happened to us a while back. I didn't want to say anything about it because I didn't want anybody who was doing this that might be listening having the satisfaction knowing that they got us.
Single slice or multiples?
Multiple slices. There were on my car, I think there were four slices altogether.
Well, nice and even.
And I had to park on the street for, you know, whatever reason. And sure enough, I came out and I'm like, yep, of course. And so I very quickly...
you know, I didn't do the full clean job because I need to get into work and do the prep and everything. So I didn't want to spend too much time. So I got essentially most of the cheese off of my vehicle and then drove home. Then I cleaned it up later on. But as I was like, God damn it. I was pissed off when it happened.
Sure.
But as I was cleaning the cheese off of my car. Whoever thought they would say those phrases?
I got to get up and clean the cheese off the car. Yeah.
As I was cleaning the cheese off of my car and frustrated at doing it, I had a moment of clarity. And that moment of clarity was, if I was a teenager, yeah, I probably would have done the same thing.
So this, to me, falls in the ranks of soaping, egging.
Yeah.
The question was...
Light vandalism.
When it was cleaned off the car, was there residual damage?
Right. No.
Okay. You had a special protective cheese coat put on your car.
We did the undercoating and the cheese coating.
Right.
Both. To make sure that we would have protection.
American or all forms of cheese? Let's go with European as well.
Right.
Because didn't the soaping damage the car?
No, the eggs do.
Oh, the eggs.
Egg yolk and everything on the side of a house will screw up the paint. I believe it does the same on a car.
Okay.
I'd always heard it was a grapefruit that can mess up your paint.
I could see that.
Now you're going to get fruited.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So you don't know who it was.
No, but it's been happening to tons of cars in my neighborhood.
And are people annoyed? Or they?
Yeah.
I'd be pissed off, and yet I find myself grinning as you're describing it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They're annoyed, and I understand that. And then part of me stopped and goes, okay, dude. Yeah, you would have done something like
May
that.
May I ask you something? Mm-hmm. Were the cheeses placed, the slices, level, or do you have the impression that they were flung?
Oh, they were thrown.
Okay.
Yeah, so somebody's driving by.
A drive-by cheese.
And they're chucking the slices of cheese, and then they land on the cars, and then they'll melt. So,
all right.
Now, as I was telling this story over the weekend to some other people, they had said that they hadn't been getting cheesed, but they have been getting Post-it noted.
Okay. Oh, what's that?
And I was like, whatever. You just pull the Post-it note off and no big deal. But people are putting lots of them on cars, like a whole bunch of them where it's a real pain in the ass.
With the word cheese on them?
No, not with the word cheese on them. But that would take some time. You're taking a risk if you're doing that. Yeah. I see that more as like a friendly prank to somebody you know.
Yeah, Casey, you're exactly right.
Didn't you do that?
No.
Or did Rovine do it to you?
Rovine, he shrink-wrapped my car.
But I thought there was Post-it notes involved. I thought either you did Maybe. Post-it notes or he did Post-it notes on your cubicle, like covered the thing.
Yeah, I think he, I can't remember. He and I had such a back and forth, but he shrink-wrapped my car. But the joke was on him because I didn't have to clean it off. Like somebody else, like I guess security came in and they ended up cleaning my car off and I didn't have to do anything. Yeah.
So the cheese thing is apparently a TikTok challenge thing, and Nick has pulled up some YouTube videos that we're watching right now, and apparently a piece of cheese, not unlike like a card, you can fling it and it'll go really, really far. So they're kind of having fun throwing it as part of it.
I would absolutely do this as a teenager. I could see myself being a total idiot and annoying you, Preston, but I would do this 100%.
Yeah, I probably would have done that.
No, not me, man. I would never do anything like that. I was such an angel that I would never spray paint somebody's garage or throw cheese or anything like that on somebody's car.
You being sarcastic?
No, I'm not being sarcastic.
I couldn't quite tell. Yeah. All right. Let me go to Matt. Hey, Matt, you're on the air. Good morning.
What's up, guys? How you doing? Okay.
All right. That was interesting. Okay, Matt. What's up, dude?
Like you guys said, I think it's like a TikTok thing. It was like 6 months to a year ago that throwing cheese on, like, I know your pets or, like, people or on vehicles while you drive by or just while you're in the house was a huge, like, trend for whatever reason. And I like, if you look up throwing a cheese on your cat,
you're right, I did see that where you throw a piece of usually like American cheese and you toss it on your cat. Okay.
Yeah. What does that do?
I have no idea. Besides, don't you think that they'll
eat it?
And the fur is sort of it's not as obvious a sticking surface as a car is.
Right. Yeah, but I think that I think the point was it was like staying on the cat's face and the cat wasn't moving. It was just like stuck to the face.
Okay, all right.
Like instead of jumping and eating it.
Yeah.
You know what, Preston? There's a video up in the studio now from when we were throwing cheese at each other.
I don't even remember
this. I don't remember this, and we absolutely did this. How did we forget this? It's because we generate so much raw, uncompromised entertainment every day.
There's a video of Kathy throwing a slice of cheese on your face, Steve. Maybe that must have been when the cat videos came out.
No, no, that was when the baby, when people were throwing cheese at their kids.
That's right.
Children.
Yeah.
And I, if anyone in this studio looks resembles a large baby, it's me.
You.
That's true. I'm going to go to Kenny. Hey, Kenny, good morning.
None up a
Nice marriage of the two. Kenny, what's up, man?
What's going on? So in high school, I was at my girlfriend's house, and a couple of my wrestling buddies saw my car in her driveway with the windows down, and they decided to take my wrestling bag, duct tape it to my roof, but through the windows in my headliner with duct tape. And then I found a nice bag of human poop in the back seat.
Dude, that's cool. Worse than cheese.
Dude, it was awful. I couldn't get the smell out. I had a 92 tempo and it ripped my headliner, and it smelled like crap for the next 4 years.
Kenny, did anybody ever admit to pooping in a bag?
Hilarious, the fact that when I came out, they were actually mid-rap and I didn't see them, and they jumped into the bushes. And I was freaking out, like dropping F words and, you know, the whole nine.
Yeah.
And they were in the bushes cracking up. I didn't know they were in the bushes until the next day at high school. They were like, so did you find your bag? I was like, yeah, these stupid jerks did that. And they were like, yeah, it was us.
I'm so like, they caught you immediately. Isn't part of the thrill of doing it without knowledge of who did it?
I had no idea at the time. And I was like complaining to them, and. Yep, they fessed right up. And I was like, was the poop your idea? And they were like, no, that was someone else's idea. I was like, yeah, likely story.
Friends always tend to lie about their poop bags. I found that to be the case.
I should have sent it to the lab and got DNA testing done or something.
Dude, that's just destructive. And you couldn't the stink of the poop stayed in the car?
I'll give it to him. It was in a Ziploc, but I want to know who freaking poops in a Ziploc and doesn't get it all over themselves.
Well, somebody who cares.
That's impressive. Yeah.
Somebody who cares.
Now, it says here on our screen that you were going to call in and say you had bologna slices thrown on your car. Is that a completely different person or what?
Okay. We used to do that in high school. I don't really have a story, but I figured it would get me on the air.
Lead with the poop bag.
No, the poop beats bologna.
Yeah, buddy.
That's way better. All right, thanks, Kenny.
I'll tell you this. For a while, there was a fetish. I don't know if it still exists. It was actually in the porn world. A flinging deli meat.
Yes.
Right? You know that.
Throwing deli meat on women.
That apparently is a fetish for people, for guys, Kathy.
The only thing we did one time, and I've told the story before, is we took, we were drunk one night, and we were at somebody's apartment complex, and on the way out, we saw that there was a fire extinguisher, so we took it.
it was just sitting there.
It was just sitting there.
What could it possibly? There was no fire going on.
And it was like a chemical one. It was like a powder one. And so. Yeah. So we took it to Chet's car.
Oh, no.
And Chet's probably listening right now. Chet, I'm fessing up to this. we opened it up and shot it in his car.
How long did it stay? How long?
I don't know. I don't know, but the next day, man, some a-hole did this.
when
we never messed up.
Something that gets away from you.
Oh,
like
terrible.
The cheese is a low-level bit of prankish vandalism.
It's nothing.
Stuff like when you egg a house and then the house has to be repainted, mm-hmm. and that does happen. It'll stain the paint.
Yeah, like, smashing,
Yeah.
What do we used to call it? When you would smash a mailbox.
Baseball?
You'd take a baseball bat. What
do they call it in the beginning of Stand By Me?
Yeah, it was baseball, but they would drive down the road and try and knock them off while they were moving, but we would just smash them, it was stupid.
Boys are so different because I would never do any of this.
Right.
Like, I would never throw the cheese.
Full on destructive.
The baseball bat to the mailbox, I never understood that ever.
I did it one time as one of my great moments of revenge. Somebody had done it to my mailbox, and I quickly ascertained who had done it.
And you went...
and I got a baseball bat. The family was up on the front yard. They're all looking at me as I pull up. I get it. I look. I have the bat in my hand, and they had one of these wonderful little sort of Swiss Alps sort of mailboxes. Bam! Just bashed it to bits.
They watched
got
you.
Back in the car. Yeah.
Did anything ever come of that?
No.
That was the end.
Because they had done my house.
How'd you find out?
Everybody knew.
There was like this was like the group you knew were the family of vandals in the neighborhood.
Right. Let me go to Matt. Hi, Matt. Good morning.
Gadzooks, guys.
Gadzooks, buddy. What's up?
Hey, it's not vandalism, but it's a cute little thing that's been going on. I know you're a Jeep owner, Preston. Mm. There's this thing that people have been doing now. They leave little baby rubber ducks on your Jeep, and it usually comes with a little tag that says, "You've been ducked." And it's a real cute thing. When you get ducked, you put it on, take a picture of your Jeep, and maybe it's like a selfie, and put it on Facebook.
Someone did that to my Jeep, I'd kill him. Right. I'd murder him.
All right, so that's a cutesy thing. Okay,
it is. Yeah. I got ducked last week. It was pretty fun.
So that's like the thing you have going on in the neighborhood. Thanks. So my neighbors had they were in Manayunk. They were trading back and forth a lawn gnome.
Okay.
So that's benign.
Oh yeah.
Casey, what were you talking about? There was something where it was almost like
booing.
Wine.
He was talking about, it's kind of like booing around Halloween, which is where you leave candy, but this is wine.
Wine, alcohol, all of it, I guess. I don't know.
We did that during Halloween. So like when the kids got booed, we would take two baskets over. The parents would also get wine.
All right. That's fun. That's not waking up having to scrape cheese off your car.
It's fun.
Yeah. That's a gift.
Take it inside and get hammered.
It's a pass along thing. We do potato salad. For some reason, we just leave it
on the car.
We just leave, buckets of potatoes.
Don't eat it; it's been out all day. That'll kill you.
That's literally what I was thinking. I'm like, ew.
There's just disgusting. Not in a container, a pile of potato salad.
I'm gonna go to Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, what's up, Sarah?
When I was in high school, my sister and I were on the softball team together, and the team got into a prank war, and she actually stuck a bunch of Oreos to my car. So she separated them and stuck them all over.
Sarah, that's pretty good.
They're kind of made for that, if you stop and think about it. They come with their own adhesive. Yeah. So, that does work. How many Oreos would be the average when you would attack a car?
Probably, like, 4 full packs.
Four full packs.
Wow.
Yeah.
you want to make it a pain in the ass for him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luckily, she's the younger sister, so I made her clean it up.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, these cheesers they're going pretty light. They're doing like 3-4 slices and that's it. You could take a whole 24 pack and really
go nuts.
All you have to do is just unwrap them ahead of time.
But you're right. So you run. Now what's happening is, do you have a ring? Do you have like a doorbell camera on your house?
Well, a lot of people do, and they've been catching some of these people, but not enough identifying information is coming from that, like, license plates and so on.
Is it time to go vigilante there in Harleysville?
Yeah, maybe so. Well, listen, Rochelle sat out one night in front and hiding behind the bushes.
Really?
Yeah, waiting for him to come by.
Oh, serious?
And this wasn't even, this was way before we ever got nailed. Like, she just wanted to sit out.
And did she see them?
No. Oh. Nothing ever happened. Not like happening every night.
Did she put camo makeup on her face?
And we've heard of some people sitting in their car late at night or just waiting for him to
Does
come
anybody
by.
Anybody have cameras? Somebody's got to have a camera.
Yeah, that's what Steve was saying. There are, but nobody's gotten like license plates or
cheese brands.
Or, actual shots of the people doing it, but that's what I've heard.
What a waste, too.
Low-grade, like American.
I'm thinking they're using Kraft American cheese. I can tell by the consistency. Kraft American cheese is kind of gooey, as opposed to the kind that you get actually sliced deli.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have enough tackiness. It wouldn't be quite gluey. I think they're getting Kraft singles.
This is why you're not getting it catching on in the ritzier neighborhoods, because cheese wheels don't stick to, finer cheese won't stick to a car.
Yeah, I don't know that, I don't think the Reggiano will actually have enough stickiness to it. I'm going to go to somebody named Doobie. Hey, Doobie.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Yo, Bob, what's going on?
First, I want to say thanks to Kathy for the traffic report. She always seems to tell me as soon as I'm getting in traffic.
She's just reaffirming what you already know.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So I grew up in small town Alabama, and our city hall had this beautiful fountain, and at nighttime they would have colored lights on it, reds and blues and purples and all that kind of stuff. So as teenagers, me and my friends would go to the grocery store from time to time and buy that huge industrial box of laundry soap.
Yeah.
And at nighttime, we'd sneak up to the fountain and dump all that powdered soap into the fountain.
Okay.
So when it started running through the pump, of course, it would suds up. It would studs over. Studs would be going all over the lawn of City Hall. But the lights made it so beautiful. We had to do it from time to time.
It was just so magnificent. Soaping a fountain is a standard.
Yeah.
And it does work. And then if you get the light show, it's just a bonus.
Oh, yeah, and it was a family tradition because my dad actually told me about it when he
Oh, my God, your dad taught you to do that. That's great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care, guys.
But, yeah, I wonder if that did any damage at all, because that's part of the thing. You know, there's light vandalism, and then there's the real deal, like smashing mailboxes.
You remember?
And destruction of property.
Justin Bieber. You remember the story from a few years ago. He I think it was Lil Za, his buddy. And they went and they egged a house next door and wherever they were, Brentwood, California, wherever it was. And they were fined something like $30,000, $40,000 in damage against the paint and the door. Yeah, it'll cause real deal damage.
I'm going to go to Mike. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning, folks. How is everybody?
Good. What's up, bud?
All right. So growing up, we lived in Yatta, which is where Gary Lauer lives.
Yes.
Of course it is.
So with that... friend of mine had
three testicles.
So a friend of mine had a panel van, and they used to go to the supermarket and buy all the pies they could, and they would drive down Kensington Avenue. Now, if you've never taken that beautiful ride, you can't sit without hitting a hooker. So they would pull up, call over a hooker, slide open the panel van, and hit her in the face with a pie.
Oh, that's now to me, that's assault. You know, now, even if you want to make the case that you're providing a meal, it's still I think that's wrong.
I have a couple of questions. What kind of pies are we talking, Mike?
From what I understand, I remember they just tried to buy whatever was going expired to get it cheaper than actually paying full price. So
okay.
I'm not really sure.
Because you can just take a pie tin and fill it with whipped cream, and that's
standard. That's what Soupy Sales used to do.
It makes a mess. It looks funny. It doesn't. You know, it's not going to hurt them or anything
but a pie has some heft to it. Sometimes you don't want to kill a hooker with a pie.
Exactly. And number two. There's usually a pimp around somewhere.
Yes, who's not happy.
Who's not happy
because a hooker with pie on her face don't sell.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Anybody ever get beat up or killed because of that, Mike?
No, I never did it personally. Just the guys I hung with. I'm not really sure, but from what I understand, there was a quick pie in the face and taken off.
Mike, while I don't condone this because I consider it to be assault, did you start to accrue a knowledge of what was the preferred pie amongst hookers?
I didn't. My guess is cherry pie.
Okay.
Cherry pie. All right. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. That's that's a new one there.
Imagine the level of boredom that makes you say, I know what.
Yeah.
Let's get some pies and throw them in hookers' faces. Really?
I'm surprised that
hasn't. How about a soccer league?
I'm surprised that hasn't taken off during the pandemic. People are looking
Absolutely.
For something to do.
Right after banana bread.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Rich. Hi, Rich. Good morning.
You guys rock.
Ouch!
All right, what do you want to tell us, buddy?
Well, so in high school, probably six or eight of us started messing around and doing little things with each other's cars. It started off real small. Like, they would, my car had a pretty sensitive alarm, so they would hit it and it would go off, and I'd be in class, and somebody would say, hey, your alarm's going off. Yeah, ha ha, funny. So then we would, like, lock each other's cars in, sticky notes. The one girl had a small little F10 pickup. Some of the bigger football guys would pick it up and spin it around in a parking spot.
Yeah.
So when she tried to leave, it was sideways, locked in between two cars, couldn't go anywhere.
Right.
And it kept getting, you know, nothing major, but it kept escalating. So eventually we had this one guy, Ken. Ken, if you're listening, I miss you, buddy. He was a bigger guy. He had a like a pickup with a cap on the back, and it had the sliding back window. So we made one of our smaller guys climb through the cap, through the back window, and tie his door shut, like from one, you know, inner door to inner door.
Oh,
so there was no way for him.
Oh my God!
You could pull the door open.
Yeah.
So you know, everybody left. He was one of the last ones to leave. We didn't think anything about it. Well, we came into school the next day, and he was pissed. I mean, pissed. Turns out nobody else was there when he got out. Of course, he couldn't fit through the window.
Uh-huh.
Spent hours there. And if I remember correctly, we're talking 20 years ago. He missed his mom's birthday or something of big importance. And that's
family funeral.
Prank wars.
Yeah. So the thing with the prank war, you eventually escalate to the point where the only likely progression is murder.
Right.
And I think you can't, and that's the problem. It starts to escalate. Like, Casey, your ongoing Rovine prank war, at a certain point, it's like you can't go anywhere.
you can't go anywhere where it's actually going to cause damage or, you know, get him in trouble or get yourself in trouble.
Yeah.
My favorite thing I did to him, though, is I had that flashing, like it was a police light, and it had a really, like, heavy-duty magnet, and I caught him as he was heading out of the parking lot to go to lunch, and he was driving all the way to Manayunk, and I stuck that thing on top of his car, and he drove all the way to Manayunk.
So it was a self-powered, like a battery-powered light, which is hilarious.
He didn't even come close to touching you. He tried every time.
It was a failure every time he tried to do
it. What were some of the other ones you did?
I don't even
remember. Who did the M&Ms in the overhead? Was that you did that to him?
No, I would never waste M&Ms, Kathy.
No,
Was it ping pong balls?
It might have been ping pong balls or...
Like in the overhead cabinet at his cubicle. And so when he came
Was it M&Ms?
I could have sworn it was
M&M's. I thought it was M&M's.
We had so many effing M&M's here at one point because we had done a contest. It might have been M&M's.
I know it was something small like that, like BB's, M&M's, ping pong balls or whatever, but
For a while we were doing, the standard was to do a just married sign on the back of a car.
Yeah.
With, everything, like the streamers and the cans rolled up so the second they pulled away it would deploy.
What was that magnet that we put on the back of Bill Weston's car?
Oh,
it was like, what has two thumbs and loves BJs or something like that? And it was like, this guy right here. But it was something like that, but it wasn't that.
Yeah, we had some inappropriate ones.
We have a whole bunch. There was one that we had. We had an electric a license tag holder that we never got to install. Every time you would hit the brake would send up some sort of foul message.
Whatever message we wanted to put on there.
I'm going to go to Brian. Hey, Brian, good morning.
Matt Damon.
What's up, bud?
What's happening? Listen, this is the era of everyone going out and getting those ribbon magnets that would stick on the car.
Yes.
So my friends thought it was hilarious to go steal a bunch of those and a bunch of those magnets you would get from like a pizza shop and just completely cover my car with it in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. When I come out in the morning, I'm going 16 miles up the Blue Route and these magnets are flipping off my car, you know? So I figured, look, I work at a restaurant. I'm going to win. I stole a whole thing of blue cheese. I mean, a big bucket of blue cheese, and I covered this guy's car in blue cheese. Okay?
Oh, man.
And I could just imagine the person riding behind him on the way to work flying blue cheese and passing your car, man. I know this. And he did not live close to a gas station like that you can go to one of the cheap, you know, spray wash ones. There's no way he didn't at least drive a few miles on 95 with blue cheese covering people's
car. How thick was it ladled on?
What's that?
How thick was the blue cheese coating?
Oh, it was like that thick, good stuff. Man, it was real chunky.
I know the exact
creamy stuff.
Yeah, I know the style you're talking about. I worked in a couple restaurants, a big bucket of that stuff.
Fantastic. I really wanted to feel, I wanted to feel like pepperoni and throw the pepperoni on it.
To make his car mobile pizza, yeah.
That's pretty good,
I already had to put gloves on and slime it up. I mean, come on, that's great.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
It is. So when you get out, though, when you are the subject of that sort of thing, and it's, you know, it's like, oh, no. You know, like removing cheese from your car was the last thing you wanted to do that morning.
Yeah.
You know?
One thing that you can do is tie, well, people don't really have metal trash cans anymore, but if you tied metal trash can lids to somebody's bumper and then you put it under their car, so when they pull, so they don't see it when they're getting into the car, and then they pull away and they have this rattling, blah, 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 you know, with the metal trash can lids. That was a gag that people would pull back in the day.
What was that thing they used to sell? It was in the Johnson & Smith catalog for years. It was a novelty catalog. You remember. And it was a whistle you'd put in the exhaust pipe. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
As you were driving.
It's like the whistles go woo.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Really? That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like it. I'll go next to Nick. Hey, Nick, good morning.
What's up, guys? You guys rock.
Thank you, buddy. What's going on, Nick?
So we used to... We'd go to the dollar store and buy gigantic tubs of Vaseline. And you know how your windshield wipers in the down position, you can still fold them up?
Yeah.
Well, we would smear the entire windshield wiper with Vaseline, and then we'd put them back down against the windshield. And then we'd go right into the middle of the driver's windshield with our finger full of Vaseline, and we'd put one dot.
Okay.
So when they got in the morning, and they're like, what's that smudge on my windshield? And they turned their windshield wipers on, and it would streak the whole windshield.
What a pain in the ass to clean off, too, man.
Because it's oil-based.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a long... You know, that puts me in mind of one of my... It's not a car thing, but it's... It's one of the best.
Thanks, Nick.
The talcum powder in the hair dryer or the talcum powder on the ceiling
fan. The ceiling fan is excellent.
It never fails. It's just the best.
Speaking of the windshield wipers, this morning as I was leaving, my windshield was kind of foggy. There was a little bit of moisture on it, too. So I turned the wiper on, and it goes across. And then I'm backing out when I did it. And I look, and I see like a little trail where the wiper went across. I'm like, what the hell is that? So I hit the wiper again. Dude, there was, I don't know how this happened, there was a dead bird wedged in my windshield wiper.
Oh, my God.
And I raked it across, and like feathers and stuff came across. Yeah.
You had a bird die in your windshield?
Well, there's a, the basketball goal is above where my car was parked, so it had to have hit that and landed right on my windshield.
Oh, so the kids play basketball with dead birds.
But yes, yeah, exactly.
So. Wow, man, that's, I thought you were going to say a lantern fly for a second.
No, but it's a full bird, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Jesus.
Yeah, let me go. We got to take a break here in just a second. I'm going to go to Dave. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Hey, you guys rock.
Thank you, Dave. What's up, bud?
Not much, man. So, first off, wasn't me. I was going to claim innocence right off the start here, but when we were in high school, I had a buddy who thought it was hilarious to collect dog poop from his house, and he would come during school. We'd go out around lunch. And he would stick pieces of the poop under the door handles of the cars in the parking lot. And then at the end of the day, we would sit and watch people come out. And when they go to open their door, their hand would go in and right into the poop.
Oh.
And it was just hilarious.
Yeah, the poop prankers are a rare breed. I don't get the poop stuff. But were you victimized by this as well?
Oh, I never got it done to me, thankfully. But
yeah.
It actually got to the point where the police were called to the school to say that it was actually a crime, and we never got to do it again. But
as funny as that might be for the guy who did that, he's the one that had to handle all this dog crap and shove it up in there.
And has made it a thing.
He's been picking dog crap, so he's spent more time with all this feces than the person who received this. So I think...
He's got issues.
Yeah, he might...
It's time to visit the therapist.
At least he used the glove.
Are we sure?
But still, he's had more time smelling it and handling it and all that stuff.
I'm going to get one over on this guy.
Right.
It's going to take about 5 hours of collecting dog crap.
Exactly.
But it'll be worth it for the 3.5 seconds he seems to be
on. I mean, honestly, use chocolate pudding or something. You know, you don't actually have to use real poop.
If you're going to be a purist, you need to go. You need to be accurate. Yeah.
Well, interesting. Not one call concurring the cheese thing. So it looks like it's exclusive to my neighborhood.
It's to your neighborhood, and clearly it was sparked by this TikTok thing.
That we're getting cheesed. But it's been going on for, like I said, like most of the summer, I think.
Most of the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. It happens every now and then.
Does it? I assume it's the kind of thing that will not translate into the winter. As temperatures drop, the cheese will be more inclined to fall off.
I think you're right. So we're running out of time to catch these people, Steve. It's like... It's like Point Break. They're going to hit, and then they're going to move
gonna
on.
They're going to leave. They're going to Australia. They're
gonna, different territory.
They're going to go surfing in Australia.
Got to get them before the tide
cheese
change.
Bandits.
Do you want to borrow my ghillie suit so you can hide out in your...
I honestly thought about it. Wearing a ghillie suit and cozying up next to one of my shrubs in the front yard.
Yeah.
And then when they come by...
The notion of Rochelle sitting out behind the hedges with like a Navy SEAL headset on and infrared goggles.
We could do it.
Yeah.
It's like a stakeout. You just got to be patient.
Yep.
You know, it's going to eventually happen. So, all right, anyhow. Yep, exactly.
I see him. Preston, I see him.
All right.
Target acquired.
We are going to take a break. I want to remind you, we have a Tattoos Day taking place. Chance for winning a $350 gift certificate for Floating World Tattoo and Piercing. Text the word tattoo to 39333. We'll see if you win. We have a lot of guests on the show this morning, including Joey Fatone and Mr. Skin and a bunch of others. I'll give you the details in a bit as well. When we return, the Bizarre File is on the way when we get back.
93.3 WMMR presents Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month, Nick Perry and the Underground Thieves. I'm feeling good.
celebrating our area's best talent, bringing it to you on air, online, and in the community. Hear and see more at WMMR.com, keyword local shots. Nick Perry and the Underground Thieves. Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month. Sponsored by Family and Company Jewelers. Find a band that rocks her world at Family. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Kathy's birthday today, yay! By the way. So we celebrate Kathy's birthday, and I presented it. I made Casey a birthday video, and then I realized, wow, there's some other birthdays coming up, too. And if I don't make them for everybody else, then everybody's going to be mad at me or, you know, feel that, boy, well, you made one for Casey. You didn't make one for me. So now I've made one for everybody except Steve, which
is a
long ways off.
I think you got me some good stuff. You know, I was looking at something. I think you got me for my birthday, Preston, by the way. I use that Thor's hammer tool set.
Oh, yeah.
The Molinar tool set all the goddamn time. It's right there.
But this the video I made for Kathy for her birthday, this one nearly killed me.
I was crying.
Were you?
Laughing so hard. It's amazing.
This one I put a lot of work into.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
I shot it on location.
On location. Multiple locations.
Yeah. A few locations. And let me tell you, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen it yet.
God, watch it, please.
But doing these live performances in an active parking lot with people driving around and walking around.
People looking at you.
Yeah. I'm telling Carter, my son, was
is he your cameraman and all these?
He's my cameraman, and I'm like, just ignore everybody. Yeah, yeah. Just keep it on me. Don't worry about it. They're going to think we're idiots, but just keep doing it.
It could be worse. It could be you would have to set up a tripod or set up some sort of stand and be by yourself. At least someone holding a camera suggests this is a thing.
Yep.
There's so many, cameos, if that's what you want to call them, or whatever. But it just kept getting better and better as it went on. And the people I'm sending it to, I'm like, watch it until the end. stay with it.
But it was really guerrilla style. I'm like, we'd sit in the parking lot. I'm like, okay, there's nobody here right now. Let's go. Go, 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 go. So I'm singing in a hairbrush in a parking lot.
Oh, man. The salsa dancing and the outfit and the chest hair. Oh, my God. It's excellent.
That was fun.
Big surprise at the end.
What's that?
And the big surprise at the end.
Yep. Oh, my gosh.
So you can watch us now. This is on PrestonandSteve.com. By the way, Mark Anthony, I love the music. I love that salsa music.
Oh, that's who that was?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. And you did a good job. It
Thank
was
you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
How big is your green screen?
It's huge. It's like... it's not quite the size of this wall behind here. It probably comes to about right the edge of the TV all the way to the
so
wall.
So like
there. It's
eight
big.
Feet?
It might be 10 feet.
10 feet. Oh, yeah, you still got the big one, yeah. Yeah, I have a 5-foot one that I got a while ago that just like it pops up.
Yeah.
You have to leave this one set up, right?
Is it? I break it down. Yeah. It's I left it up for a while. Then I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be using this for a little while. And then when I do it behind the drum kit, I actually just tack it onto the wall behind me.
Okay, because that's a huge screen.
It's really big, yeah.
I got to watch the whole thing. I haven't seen it all yet. But Casey and I chipped in. We got you some decorations. Dinner on Blanc.
I have a cake for her in the fridge, by the way.
Parts of it are a little harder.
Yeah. Deflated white balloons. That's so nice of you guys.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, these balloons are for you.
Thinking of
leftover decorations.
I do have a present for you, though. Can I give it to her real quick? Yeah. You guys don't know what it is, but this is this is on behalf of me and also my friend Steve Wilson from Wilson's Secret Sauce. We got you a little gift.
Okay.
All right, he's got to head out of the studio.
Pandemic, I got you one of these little masks.
Oh, thank
you.
Here
you go.
All right, let's see what that is.
That's great.
Wow.
I want to see it. Here. Oh, it's wood. It's Barry Wood, the well-known meme of the very large African-American gentleman with a tree trunk for a penis.
Put it on, Kathy, so we can get it on video.
And show Marissa next to you. She's on your right.
Hold on.
That is awesome.
And fold your...
You
get a little fold down there.
Yeah, it's...
right where his penis would be.
Yep. Your nose is going to be where his penis should be. Right, that's great, Kathy. That's excellent. Wow.
wear that if you do any school functions.
Oh, God.
Or is that your husband?
Are you going to do anything today or just...
You know what? I'm still not feeling like 100%, so probably not today.
You got whomped.
I got hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll hang out. Maybe we'll go to the pool or something like that.
Okay, nice. All right, so you can see the video. It's up on PresidentsDave.com. Or if you would like to subscribe to my YouTube channel where all my drum videos are, you just go to YouTube and type in Preston Elliott, and then you can subscribe. And I have a bunch of videos ready
to go. You sheepishly say it, and I'll tell you, there's some good stuff to watch
there. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Thank you. But, it's me playing drums, having fun, and doing... And occasionally salsa dancing.
Oh, my gosh. It was great. It was excellent. Excellent.
All right. Let's do the Bizarre File. Here we go.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
And it's brought to you by Vet Multi-Serve. That's what it says here. So if you are a veteran or you know a veteran in need of supportive housing services, you can call 888-385-1250 for 24-hour help.
Oh, that's great.
We will start with this story out of Michigan. She was pronounced dead by paramedics, even though she was still alive. A 20-year-old woman was reportedly discovered still breathing at a funeral home. Paramedics declared the woman dead on Sunday morning after she was found in cardiac arrest inside her home. They arrived. It was a call for an unresponsive female. When they got there, they found a 20-year-old who was not breathing. The paramedics performed CPR and other life-reviving methods for 30 minutes. Given medical readings and the condition of the patient, it was determined at that time that she did not have any signs of life.
Was she a special needs?
I have no details about her, unfortunately, but... they said that because the medical examiner office was contacted because there was no indication of foul play as per standing operating procedures, and the patient was again determined to have expired, and the body was released directly to the family to make arrangements with a funeral home.
Oh my God!
Of their choosing. She was taken to James H. Cole Funeral Home, where an employee then reportedly found her still breathing. The funeral home had this to say. They said after receiving clearance from the examiner's office, she was transported to our funeral home. Upon arrival, the staff confirmed she was breathing and called EMS. There's no word on how the woman is doing. The rest of the statement said the personal information on the patient is not being released to respect the privacy of her family.
So I wonder where they found she was just where she was breathing. Was she just about to be embalmed when they found her, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. But, and no word on her current condition. Because sometimes when this does happen...
Yeah.
They don't last that long, you know. They'll expire shortly after, so we'll wait and see and have a follow-up. A Florida woman was arrested yesterday for allegedly battering her father due to flatulence inside of their residence. Nicole Dozios is 40 years old and shares a bedroom with a 59-year-old victim in their home in Largo, a city in the Tampa Bay area. Around 2 a.m. Sunday, Dozios became angry with her father due to his flatulence, and an argument ensued. She then attacked her father, punching him in the face. Upon responding to the residence, cops noted that the victim had a bloodied left eye and scratches all over his neck as a result of the attack. Dozios was arrested for domestic battery and booked into the county jail. She was later released on her own recognizance. Dozios, who has pleaded not guilty to the misdemeanor charge, has been ordered by a judge to have no contact with her father. Her rap sheet includes convictions for theft and violating probation. She was arrested in 2018 for allegedly punching her sister in the head inside the family's Largo home. I don't know if she farted in that occasion.
Queefed. It sounds a little unhinged to me.
Prosecutors subsequently declined to pursue a domestic battery case against her in that particular one, but this time they got her. The driver, this is a local story, the driver of an SUV collided with a truck carrying boxes of bees? In Gloucester County, man. New Jersey, Sunday morning. Happened around
bees!
It happened around 1 a.m. at the intersection of Main Road and Harding Highway. The impact of the crash trapped the driver of the SUV inside the vehicle and sent more than 50 boxes of bees spilling onto the highway. Several of the boxes of bees broke open and began to swarm first responders. Crews wore special suits with hoods to help protect themselves from the bees as they were trying. They were trying to get the woman out of the car,
yeah.
And they're being attacked by bees.
Bees!
Yeah, firefighters also doused the bees with water in an effort to protect the medics and firefighters at the scene. Crews eventually freed the driver, who was then taken to Cooper University Hospital. She was in critical condition. Officials said that bees had entered the ambulance and presented a challenge to medics attempting to treat the driver.
Was she stung repeatedly? Did they mention if she was the victim?
No, I don't know if it had anything to do with the bees or not. I think the accident had hurt her. A beekeeper was called to the scene and worked to contain the bees and get them back into the boxes. So far, there's no word on what might have caused the crash. A group of teens allegedly broke into a New Jersey petting zoo after hours, mistreating some animals, letting others loose, and even putting lipstick on a miniature pony.
Okay, so the thing is, when they do this, they say putting lipstick on a pig, right?
Right, yes.
They even screwed that up.
Now, police are trying to crack down the trespassers. On Saturday at about 10 p.m., Jimmy Abma, one of the owners of Abma's Farms, which is 30 miles east of New York City, raced to the property's barnyard petting zoo when he and his family heard a commotion outside. He began yelling at the group of at least six alleged trespassers he saw on the property. While he was trying to find out what was going on, someone sent him a Snapchat picture of a teenage girl with long platinum blonde hair and wearing a black crop top and ripped jeans riding a miniature donkey in the petting zoo.
Mm.
The family wrote on Facebook, "The teens opened the gates, rode our miniature donkeys, who should not be supporting that much weight. One person took a Snapchat of another person riding our mini donkey and applied the Abma's Farm geofilter. We caught two of the trespassers trying to steal. We called police and the two fled. The teens allegedly tried to swipe tables and chairs from the property as well."
So they break in, they're abusing the animals, and they put the filter on just to let people know where they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, come on.
And then they put lipstick on a donkey.
Pony.
So they're trying to track them down to figure out who they were and why they did what they did. All right, and then finally, we'll end with a story. A mysterious safe that appeared on New York State farmer's property with a note attached will remain a mystery for the time being, the farmer said. The large safe, estimated between 500 and 600 pounds, appeared in a field on Kirk Mathis's farm with a note attached that read, "If you can open it, you can have what's inside." Mathis said deputies had to disperse a crowd of people who attempted to force it open. He said they took a sledgehammer to it, knocked off the dial and handle. They worked on the hinges, kind of beat it up. Mathis said he relocated the safe to a secret location. And for the time being, he isn't revealing where it's being housed. He said, "My personal feeling is leave it as a mystery." He said the safe mystery has proven to be a welcome distraction from COVID-19 pandemic and the upcoming presidential election. He said, "If you open it, the show is over. In these times, with the virus and politics, it might get people a chance to set their problems or troubles aside and have a lot of fun talking about it."
I wonder what's in that stupid safe.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I think he's got some pretty high expectations about this safe.
COVID-19, but that stupid safe.
The safe eventually could become part of a planned local history museum in the town.
I see a $50 million complex built around it.
Right?
Yeah.
It could be holding millions of dollars. It could have confetti in there, said the plan.
Welcome to stupid safe world.
Working on the museum. They said, "You have no idea, so just dream what's in the safe."
It's like Willy Wonka.
Yeah, and there you go. That is what I have in the bizarre file for you this morning. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to reveal the results from our I Bleed for Preston and Steve blood drive, which took place on Friday.
Yes.
Thanks to everybody who was a part of that. Tattoos Day as well. Text the word tattoo to 39333. Let's see if we can get you a free gift certificate. Actually, $350 gift certificate for Floating World Tattoo and Piercing on South Street. We'll be right back.
Love MMR? Buy some gear. Check out the Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Snazzy.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the Delaware Valley. We had our I Bleed for President Steve blood drive on Friday in a completely different format than we've ever done before. Obviously, the pandemic has made things for everyone who's running some sort of charity event a struggle this year. And everybody's coping with it the best that they can. And so we had split up our locations instead of doing it in one spot. We obviously were expecting far fewer people to participate. And I do have our total that we got.
You want one of these?
Yeah, sure. Let's do this because I'm very happy to announce that our 15th annual, I Bleed for Presidency blood drive brought in 636 blood donations.
Yeah, very respectable.
It's, in fact, it's damn good. In fact, Eric Simon, our promotions director, wrote in the email. He said, hey, it is a huge number considering what it takes to execute a blood drive during a pandemic. So it wasn't a little feat. It's, you know, we've done more than that in the past, but it's a completely different scenario. And the bottom line is, you saved a ton of lives.
You sure did.
By doing this, and more than 100 donors gave blood for the very first time.
That's sensational. So we were all over the place. You and Nick were in Oaks. Casey, you went to...
Me and Marissa were at the Fillmore.
The Fillmore. Yeah. I was at the FOP Lodge 5. And I'm sure you guys had the same experience. People were energetic and eager to do it. And talking to the nurses, you got to remember, all those school collections that they were able to do, they haven't been able to do this time around. Businesses shut down. They're not able to do those collections. So this was essential. So you guys knocked it out of the park.
Yep. So we want to thank the American Red Cross, Penn Jersey Blood Services Region, Helen, Elena, Hammond, Annette, Janine, Felicia, and all of the staff and volunteer on site. Everybody at our three locations, as Steve had mentioned. BP Miller from Chorus Photography for taking all the great photos. And, of course, all of the donors who came out to be a part of it. And, by the way, the shirts were a big hit.
They were.
Don't they look great? And everybody loved the fact that they're Flyers colors this time of year. So hopefully you got a chance to be a part of the blood drive. And, you know, we'll set our sights on next year, hopefully being in a completely different frame. But we had such great people, and it was awesome to see, you know, people getting out and doing it despite whatever issues they may have. And it was great.
As we said before, if anybody knows how to handle stuff like this, it's the Red Cross. So everyone felt very confident.
Thank you to Brent Porsche and Pierre Robert and Jackie Bam Bam for coming out and saying hello to the donors as well, and thanks to all the volunteers. It was just a great day. It was awesome. Yeah. Now, that's not the only MMR-related charity event that took place over the weekend. Casey did the Bend to Shore bike ride with Team WMMR, and that was on, was that Saturday?
It was on Sunday.
Okay.
Saturday probably would have been a better day to do it because it rained a little bit on Sunday. But, Sunday morning, Chuck D'Amico is here. He's an assistant program director of WMMR. Mm-hmm. Saturday night, what we ended up doing is we drove a car and dropped it off in Atlantic City so that on the bike ride on Sunday, we left from Cape May, from Sunset Beach in Cape May, and rode our bikes up to Atlantic City. And the tour was kind of canceled, postponed, and turned into a virtual tour. So normally the Tour to Shore is a 65-mile bike ride from Philly to Atlantic City. And so they just asked that you do 65 miles between July 26th and August 23rd. Right. So I ended up, my grand total, I ended up logging 420.5 miles.
That's awesome. Time. That's so good.
You could add another 41 to that because I thought it actually started on July 25th and it actually started on the 26th. So on the 25th, I did 41 miles. So I wanted to thank Chuck for being an awesome wingman all summer long, getting ready for this ride, because we did this 55-mile ride on Sunday. And, you know, listen, we had the wind at our back.
Yeah.
So it was,
and a song in your heart.
And a song in our heart. But, you know, it wasn't like a heavy wind. It was like 4 miles per hour. But
it's still
wind
regardless.
At your back is better than wind at your face. And it doesn't matter. But we had like 15 people come and join us, and we rode en masse and stopped along the way. You know, we stopped at little, like the lighthouse and the North Sea Wall.
Some sort of photo op spots and things like that. But Casey's been working really, really hard this year on this.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a super strong bike rider.
Dude, tell them about that app.
Okay.
Because there's a video of this, which is fantastic.
It's really cool. So if you check it out on my Instagram page, the app is called Relive. So anybody who does any sort of activities and you track your activity, whether it be a Map My Ride or a Strava, this is called Relive. And what it does is it maps your activity, but if you take pictures along the way, it geotags the pictures, and then it does it like a 3D recreation of whatever you did. So in our case, it was a 55-mile ride from Cape May to Atlantic City, and every single picture that we loaded, I think you're allowed to load 10 pictures per activity or whatever. So every single picture that was taken, this 3D video would, you know, go along the route and then stop where the picture was taken, show you the picture, and then pick the route back up again.
And it's awesome. A satellite image. So it's not, you know, drawn. It's not graphics created. It's actual photos of the region. And it tracks it follows along in a 3D sweeping camera. The camera movements are swinging around. It looks real dramatic. And then it'll stop at these points where you took the photos and show the photo.
Yeah.
And then move on to your next. It is one of the coolest things I've ever seen as far as apps go to log your trip, whatever it may be.
You don't see stuff like this like on professional television shows.
No.
I mean, that's as good as this app is. And it really kind of puts you in the journey that you took. But it was amazing.
It was. And so when my cousin was explaining it to me, I couldn't quite picture it. And then when he showed it to me, I was like, okay, this is really, really cool. So if you're having a hard time understanding what we're talking about, check it out on my Instagram page. It's up there as like an IGTV video. But and then afterwards, the camera kind of pulls out and shows you the scope of what we did. And so, so if you're going to do like decent amount of miles on a bike or whatever, you were asking, Press, if you could do like a car road trip, possibly, you know, as long as I guess if you have a cell signal that you don't lose any sort of GPS.
I'm curious
tracking.
If it would work over a series of days if you were taking a driving trip and able to stop along the way and take photos, and if it would track your route that way if you're hitting a few states or something along those lines.
I bet you there's a component or something similar to it that would do that. If they have this, they can certainly do that. And following a GPS signal from your phone in a car. Is not a problem.
Yeah.
It was really cool for me, Casey, because I'm a total geography nerd. So
yes,
like,
you are.
But following along on your trip was really neat. And then to sort of overlay the map on top of it, it gave me a geography boner. So I really enjoyed every second of it.
Plus,
so,
it looks like we did 55 miles in about a minute and a half.
Right, yeah.
You guys are going very fast.
We took our time, and I got to say, like, I felt really good at the end. I felt like I probably could have done at least another 20
good
more
for
miles.
You, man.
But I want to give a shout out, and I got an email from one of our riders, this guy named Justin, who's a police officer in Chester County. So, Justin Fritz and his wife Jess rode with us on Sunday, and it was Jess's birthday. So, they did this, I guess, for Jess's birthday. Now, they had never done that kind of mileage before, and they were also on, like, mountain bikes, right? So the rest of us were all on road bikes. So whenever we hit any sort of incline, so we had to go over some bridges and stuff like that, they were having a tough time. So if we did 55 miles, they basically did the equivalent of, like, 70 miles because they had these big, fat tires. But she powered through it, and so Justin wanted to give a big shout-out and a shout-out to his wife, Jess. And I have to agree, like, she just was a trooper and powered through it. So that is for Jess. And also wanted to give another shout out to my cousin Bob, because Bob would end up going back and like catching up with them and would ride with them. And Bob's also like a history guy, so he was giving them the history of like every single beach. So I wanted to give a shout out to them. Also wanted to give a shout out to Philadelphia SWAT team. They ended up doing the ride on Sunday as well. They did Philadelphia to Atlantic City. I ended up meeting up with Mark O'Connor from the Irish Pub and people from the Philly SWAT team. I would have met Joe Sullivan, former Chief Inspector Joe Sullivan, but he fell and broke four ribs.
Are you serious?
Yeah. In the ride?
In the ride. Finished the ride,
oh,
Kathy.
God.
Finished the ride with four broken ribs and then ended up driving home and going to the hospital.
Oh, my God.
He texted me later that night. He's like, man, I'm sorry I missed you. I was like, dude, you're a friggin' warrior. So he fell, went down really, really hard. I mean, listen, he had four broken ribs, but he also, like, you know, smashed his arm and his head and his back and all that sort of stuff and still finished the ride.
So any idea at this point how you did money-wise or how
So our team ended up, listen, our goal was to raise $40,000. Yeah. We raised $15,000. As you can see with the blood drive and, you know, any sort of charity thing going on, everything is off. Like the Bend to the Shore, goal was to raise over $1 million. We're at just under $350,000 raised. So, you know, fundraising is down all across the board. So we raised $15,000.
But in the context,
our team is definitely top five.
Good.
Steve Morrison, you donated $500. Thank you so much to donating $500 to Team WMMR Rock and Rollers. That was really, really generous of you. So thank you for that. And then also I wanted to, you know, send out love and condolences and respect to Terry O'Connor, whose husband, Corporal O'Connor, was killed in the line of duty like 5 months ago. If you recall, he was a SWAT member. They were they were serving a warrant, and they shot through the door, and he was killed in the line of duty. So I met her on Sunday, and so I wanted to, you know, send all my love and respect and condolences to her and you know, everybody in the O'Connor family.
Now, also, there was a person you encountered on the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, listen, there were a couple of cowbells along the way, people, like, cheering us, and Pat Gallen from CBS, he ended up passing us in Wildwood. He didn't realize it was us until afterwards, but...
We passed Kathy Romano along the road.
No, we did not. No, Kathy was sick at home, so... But normally, we would have passed her and Matt Corden in Sea Isle, but... there was a guy who wrote, he wasn't on our team. We stopped in at Wawa. Thank you, Wawa, for being our official rest stop. We stopped at Wawa in Sea Isle, and it rained there for a little bit. And then when we left Sea Isle, apparently this guy rode with us from Sea Isle.
He just kind of appeared out of nowhere?
Just appeared out of nowhere. This dude, older dude, probably in his 60s, super fit, wearing a bright yellow shirt. He ends up on my side in Ocean City. We had gone through Strathmere, over the bridges, and now we're along West Avenue in Ocean City, and this dude just appears. And so I end up talking to him for, God, like, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes or whatever, as we're just cruising down, you know, West Avenue and then Bay Avenue. And this dude was just the best. Like, he was full of so much wisdom and positive energy. And I'm talking, like, just... A wise, wise man, and I was listening to everything that he had to say about living life. And, you know, you're not guaranteed tomorrow, but you still should be, you know, prepare as if you are going to be awarded tomorrow, and all this sort of stuff. And then, you know, and then like that, he was like, all right, have a great life. And then he left.
I must go now.
And I've watched too many movies in my day. I turned to the guy next to me. I go, was that guy real?
And then he turned. That guy said, "I'm not even real."
I was like, "Was that guy real?" Because he
No, he's real. I'm not.
He was absolutely everything I needed in my life right now. Like, it was just.
He just inspired you.
Yes. Yeah. Because listen, I'm trying to like.
You have every reason to fear your thermostat. There are flying squirrels.
I needed that validation.
If you feel you're going to be attacked, draw your arms up into your sleeves so he can't see your fists.
Hidden fists?
Collect as many pine cones as you can.
Wait a minute.
Learn to run away when you need to. So and jump a lot.
Let me ask you, how did he start to offer this this wisdom? Did your conversation just lead him to that, or did he just say, let me tell you something?
No, it wasn't forced. It was supernatural. Not supernatural.
Right, right, yeah.
It was wonderfully natural.
I am the god of good advice.
No, it was... It was not.
I bring you wisdom.
I just bit my tongue. I just bit my tongue. God damn it.
Did you bit your tongue?
Yeah. So he was. I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you wisdom. Lots of good advice. Encouragement, too. A valid life path. A reason to live. He's contrary to your usual god of hellfire.
It was just what I needed, though.
Yeah, so, but to that point, how did the conversation strike up when you started to get into things that were a little bit more
metaphysical and spiritual.
It didn't
and get, sexual.
It did well. It started off sexual yeah. because he noticed the bulge I had yeah. for him. No, he. It was.
Dear God, this kid's packing up salami.
I don't know where to go from there.
So how did
the progression of the conversation was, to me, it felt very natural.
Right.
And he had said something that was like a little bit self-deprecating. And I said, no, you look like you're really,
you look fit, boy.
I said, no, you look really fit.
Oh, thank you.
And he was like, no, man, yeah, I know, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. He's like, no, but, you know, I like everything that you guys like, you know, and suds and donuts and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, but he just went on to just sort of explain that you can have all of those great things, but you don't only have to have that. Like, you know, and just talking about just enjoy life.
You can
life
also and have whores.
Just enjoy your life, but don't, like, overindulge. And,
so that's why he's out on the bike ride?
Yes. Yeah.
Meaning that? Okay, so he's out getting some exercise. So he was attributing it to that. You can still party yeah. and have a good time, but you need to... You got to be cognizant of
counter it,
of yeah. staying on the right path as
he
well.
He said, "It okay. sounds like he was in sort of, and you all were in sort of. The endorphins are released when you're exercising, and you get sure. sort of a natural high. You tend to be, you tend to appreciate things more.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and so he was all retired, and just at a point in his life where he was enjoying life. And listen, I'm no spring.
You got to try whippets.
Haven't done Whippets since July 3rd, 2000.
Ah.
I remember the day I had a terrible headache afterwards. But anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I just, there are different stages in your life. Like, so my nephews just went off to college, and I just, you know, I gave them a little bit of advice as they were going off to college. Not old fuddy-duddy stuff, but it was like, you know, the biggest piece of advice I say is just make sure you go to class, right? Go to class. And then also,
don't play with bear traps.
Anybody that's going between the ages of 16 to 22, which is, you know, middle of high school to, you know, through college, I always say, you know, these, you don't realize how important those 6 years are in the development of your life, but you can really go off track between 16 and 22.
I get
and,
that.
And the further you go off track, the harder it is to get back on track. But here I am at 40 something.
Yeah.
And if I'm awarded, if I'm allowed to live to, let's say, 80 years old, well, I don't want those to be crappy years, you know. I want them to be fun years where I can get out and enjoy life. And so what I was doing on Sunday is paramount and important to
the enjoyment of life
and
the fulfillment.
That potential.
Yeah, I get you. That makes total sense.
When Casey was first telling us about this, you were amazed at this person. He said all the right things at the right time.
Yeah.
And you just thought his wisdom was spot on. And you had posed the question to us, I believe, what is the greatest piece of advice you've ever received?
From a stranger.
From a stranger.
Hmm.
Huh.
This guy was part of my life for 10 minutes, and I probably will think about him forever.
Well, do you want to try to find out who he was?
Yeah, why not?
Did you get a first name?
No.
Not even a first name?
Did you get a first name, John?
Bike Angel, I think his
name was. Bike Angel, I think his name was.
Bright yellow shirt.
My name is Larry Lauer.
Gary's brother?
Could you imagine?
All right, well, let's see.
You must have been adopted.
Here's what I know about him.
Let's see if we can narrow this down. He was in his 60s.
He's from Lycoming County.
Ocean City.
He's from Lycoming. No, because we were in Seattle, if you recall.
We were in Ocean City when we saw him?
But he started with us in Sea Isle.
How many times did you have audition?
I didn't see him until Ocean City.
Yeah, I know. Here's what I know. He's from Lycoming County. He spent years working in Atlantic City. You know, dealer as management and
casino
all that.
Casino dealer, not drug dealer.
No. He was a total drug dealer.
Yeah. I learned a lot.
That's it.
When you're negotiating a chainsaw, it's very handy.
Yeah.
Was he familiar with WMMR?
Didn't even.
Because he saw you guys were all wearing team jerseys, right?
Yeah.
So he didn't say, the radio station never came up in the conversation.
That part never came
up. Did he know you guys were doing a charity ride?
Chuck? Did he know we were doing a charity ride?
That guy?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. But he was we were in separate groups. You were in the middle group and I was in the front group. And I didn't see him until you guys rolled up behind us. I never knew he was there.
Did he dispense any advice to you, Chuck? Like, eat more fruit.
No, he just said, you know, keep going. I'm going that
way. Keep on trucking.
Yeah.
All right, let's take your case. What was the most salient piece of advice he gave you that really, of all the things that he was clearly encouraging you and inspiring you, what was the one thing he said to you that really stuck?
Basically, to treat your body right.
Okay.
You
know?
that it's as simple as that. Like, this is the vessel that's going to take me on through the rest of my life. And
well, you're in a long time, you're in some of the best shape you've been, and you're going in a great direction. I mean, you're clocking major miles on your bike.
Well, listen, I feel better now. Listen, I'm still extremely overweight,
but but you're on the right path.
But I feel better now. We had gotten done a ride a few weeks back, and it was probably like a 40-mile ride or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know, we got back, cleaned up, started walking to the beach, and I just had this feeling like, you know, had I done 40 miles, let's say back in May, I would have been feeling it. I would have been feeling it in my back, in my arms, my knees, and all that. And I didn't. Like, and it wasn't just muscular that I didn't. That I felt good. It was like it was all of it, right?
It's a glow. You can say it's a spiritual thing.
Well, you know, I mean, from exercise, you get that sort
that
of
endorphin,
like, that endorphin rush. Mm-hmm. But it was just an overall like
when I work out, I always an old Indian medicine man appears to me.
Wow. I think it has everything to do with the fact that I've been a sitz wiper for
leave
the
it
past
in the gym.
Couple of
months.
I'm a sit wiper now, and I think
and
that
shows.
Has everything to do.
Adapting with your method of cleaning your butthole has really proven fortuitous to you. So Preston, what was the most salient advice you ever got
from a stranger?
From a stranger, who appeared to you, who you were not quite sure was real.
I don't have any stories. I'm sure it's happened at some point in my life, but nothing is coming to mind.
I remember what it was for me, and it was also an article. But it was somebody who gave me the advice, and she told me that she got it from this article that she had read, and she had ended up sending it to me. So it's kind of like that. But she said, "Don't let somebody else determine your mood for the day."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and I think about that sometimes. If somebody pisses me off, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I shouldn't let that person.
Yeah, they're controlling.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mood. And that's, you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't.
How about you, Steve? Any stranger ever? A wise sage?
Not a stranger, but I have gotten good advice. Of that, I've heard as far as one piece of advice that's really served me well, which do what you love for a living.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, and, see, and my dad shared that with me, but I don't, I'm trying
as,
to
as far as something. And then also to that point of that being happy, look at it as a moral obligation. Those around you benefit from that as well.
Yeah.
It's contagious.
Yeah.
And to, it sort of breaks up from what Kathy was saying. Is that you know, that is something that you can control how you are, and you don't need to be affected by other people's moods. But I didn't have this, you know, touched by an angel, stranger come in.
I had a stranger reach out to me last night on social media, and he let me know that he thought that I should not talk on the show anymore.
That's always.
And it was, I said, dude, I appreciate.
Bill, that's what you hired me to do.
I appreciate your feedback. I thank you so much. And then he said, no, you just ruined the flow of the show. And I said, well, that is, I appreciate your feedback. And choosing to tell me this over social media on a picture that I posted of me and my wife is the perfect place for you to tell me these things.
What was his name? Because I get an email almost every day from somebody saying the same thing.
No, his name's Dave, but whatever. He ended up taking his post.
You get Dave as well?
Oh, yeah, same guy?
It's Dave.
He's a social worker. I'm like, man.
He's a social worker?
Yeah. Oh, of course I do a deep dive into who this human being is. And he's got all these positive
Dave,
posts.
One
of the funniest posts that
he
had.
You need to be a little bit more social.
One of the funniest posts that this guy had was, it said something along the lines of, like, don't let somebody else dictate tell you what to do in life or something like that. I was like, you're telling me what to do, bro.
Here's a text from somebody who says, this was the best thing a stranger once gave them, the best advice they ever got. If it smells like provolone, leave it alone. If it smells like fish, take your dish.
Ah.
There you go. So there you go. A wise piece of information.
What the hell does that mean?
From
don't
a stranger.
Don't eat
that.
No. I wouldn't eat that. See that over there by the dumpster? Don't eat that. I didn't. I don't feel so good. I wasn't planning on that.
So you guys all have something from, and my father was a great guy, but I don't have anything that goes, well, my father always told me. Like, I don't have that in my life. Like, I don't, there was never.
Well, you get those. Well, this reminds me of the book, The Tuesdays with Maury.
Yes.
Right. A number, I think, did all you read it? Preston, I know you read it.
No, I didn't.
And it's always referred to as a book that is this. You have someone who's sort of a spiritual, someone who comes into your life who gives you all sorts of insight.
Yep.
And that's who Maury was to this author.
Yeah, I need somebody like that right now, actually.
My dad's available. My dad's available.
Is he good for that?
He'll talk to you guys as long as you want to talk.
You know, if you buy 2-ply, you can pull the 2 plies apart and have 2 rolls of toilet paper.
It's Nick's dad, and I'd like to talk to you. It'll be $50 an hour. Now, if you buy 2 hours at a clip, it'll be 40.
Yeah. You can save on parking.
Yeah. Save on parking. I'm just going to need you to pick me up a Christmas tree this year.
He'll suggest an app where you can get cheaper gas. Mm-hmm. And
I can get you a Christmas tree for $10. It'll cost you $5 worth of gas. And bridge toll.
Prices of the KOAs across the country. Tom McElwain's your man.
Nah, it's got to come from somewhere unexpected. I think that
like space.
I think that's what makes it special.
You need to be happy.
What Casey experiences has made such an impact with him because this person who you have no expectations from and they don't know you at all, but offered up something that I think that maybe pretty much anyone can benefit from.
Yeah.
And it kind of came in and out, and it was like, wow, that was really cool. This guy made an impact.
Yeah, when he rode away, I was like, don't go.
Don't stay with me. I have to. I need it back in heaven.
Yeah. What's your name?
You know me as Jesus.
Highway to Heaven. Was it that?
Michael Landon.
He would just kind of stroll in and out away. Of people's lives.
Yeah.
Aren't you the guy from Little House on the...
Shut up. You were a bedwetter, were you not?
Shut up.
Casey, there's a great video talking about advice on PrestonandSteve.com, and it's Eddie Vedder talking with Lily Cornell, Chris Cornell's daughter, and it's about a half hour long, but it talks about Eddie says that he's not great at giving advice, but he's good at listening to other people's good advice. So I think it's something that you can look into. If you have a half hour, I recommend it.
Do you know what's really amazing? In fact, I reposted it recently. It was this guy had taken footage. He was teaching his son how to play basketball. I think that's what was happening. I forget exactly what they were doing, but it is a classic case of what we all, I think, want is someone to give us that salient piece of advice that he says, I can't do it.
Oh, he was boxing.
That boxing. That was boxing. Right. And then he says, you know, Einstein explains the philosophy, and he's just such clearly a loving dad imparting usable information, and then had footage of his son a little while later excelling at what he had taught him to do because he stuck with it. Yeah. And sometimes, like you say, not having someone or not having...
God.
I always feel in my life, and I don't mean, you know, let me lay down on the couch and you can charge me $200 for this. Like my mother, I think, she passed when I was 20, and I would have loved to have had her in my life more. To guide me a bit more on those motherly things, you know, and so what I would do is I would just hire these old women to sit in my house.
My poor children, because they will ask me questions, and more often than not, rather than try to, I literally don't know, and I'll just say, you know what, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. That's a great question, and one that I've never found the answer to, so I'm sorry.
Did you
go
ask the internet?
Someone else.
Did you ask Siri or Alexa?
I offer up nothing. It's terrible. I feel horrible about that, but at least I'm being honest with my children.
Right.
I don't know, man, but sometimes people...
And you are?
In and out of your life quickly.
I'm your son.
Oh, make an impact like that.
No, I know. Well, and then you end up torturing yourself because you feel like I'm not rising to the challenge.
Yeah, totally. All right, well, listen, we need to take a break because we have Joey Fatone at 9. And
he can give us some advice.
No? Okay. We got to take a break right now. I know we had somebody we wanted to go to, but we don't have time. We're going to come back in a second. We have a whole host of interviews coming up. Joey Fatone, Mr. Skin, Michael Barkan, George Weiner, who played Colonel Sanders in Spaceballs on the show, as well as tons of other characters. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Hey, gang, it's safe to say we've never seen anything quite like 2020.
Challenging, uncertain, unprecedented. Go ahead, pick an adjective, any adjective. We'll wait.
We've been through a lot, probably with more to come, but we've stuck together like Philly always does.
It's pretty easy to feel helpless, but there are a few things we can do.
Like social distancing, avoiding large crowds, and wearing a mask when you're out in public.
It might seem like a pain, but it's nothing compared to what some people are dealing with.
So let's do the things we can do while we have to, and we'll get this great city and great country back to normal.
A message from your friends at 93.3 WMMR.
Putting Philly first.
Our next guest is on. He's always got a lot going on.
A ton of stuff. And he's really good at it.
He's going to talk about the game show.
Yeah.
It's on the Game Show Network, and it's called Common Knowledge. Do we do his song?
Yeah.
We had a lengthy discussion about boy bands the other day.
Yeah, this one, his band in particular ranked very high.
Absolutely. Please welcome Joey Fatone to the show this morning. Hey, Joey. How you doing, man?
I'm fantastic. It's early, but I'm awake because I'm still on bar time, which is great.
So I got you. I got you. Hey, listen, may I say how impressed that I have been with you and your evolution in the world of entertainment, going from music to acting to hosting. And, dude, I think you're a great host on everything I've seen you take on.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So far, everybody's, you know, majority of people tell me that. So far, no one's told me I've sucked yet.
Good. Well, that's a good barometer. You know what I think it comes from, Joey, is the fact that you clearly love game shows. You clearly love games. And that comes through.
Oh, hell yeah. Of course. I was so mad that when Press Your Luck came back out again, I was like, I love that freaking show. They used to have Press Your Luck. Then it used to be called Whammy, which was okay, but Press Your Luck came back, and I was with Elizabeth Banks, and I was so excited because they do it just like the original. That's what made me excited. So for me, game shows, I love them. Yeah, I've always loved them as a kid, always wanted to do them just because, I don't know, I just thought it was always fun, but never really got a chance. And the greatest thing was when I did Dance with the Stars, that gave me the person. It obviously showed my personality and gave me the chance to host some shows. So, was that the greatest at the beginning of it?
No, but you were immediately likable, you know. Yeah,
what you see is what you get. I don't sugarcoat anything.
Right. So you did Dancing with the Stars. You did I believe it was called the Singing Bee, both the American and the Australian version. You did a did Correct. You do like a Price is Right at the at the casino? There was a casino tour for the Price is Right.
Yeah,
were you one of those guys?
There was a live version that they did. It was actually who else? Me, Jerry Springer, Todd Newton, and I believe actually Drew Lachey from 98 would do it sometimes. We did a live version of Price is Right. Sometimes there would be a tour, but I also did it in Vegas for a couple of months. It was fun. It's an interesting way because people think that they're on camera, like on the actual show, and they're not. Second of all, register. They go out into the casino again to get complete belligerently drunk, and then they come back in and try to be a contestant, which is hilarious. And that's the fun part about that show. And I think what that really did for me is really kind of hone in on hosting chops, because you don't want to embarrass the person. You don't want to, you know, be mean to the person. But you also have to have that sort of witty, sarcastic humor, but don't go over the line, you know, kind of thing. So
yeah.
A lot of times I do that, and it's, you know, it breaks the ice with a lot of contestants. That's the other thing, you know. Talking to these contestants, you know, I go right up to them right as they come out because they only have 22 minutes, maybe 30 minutes to be, you know, on that show, get the most points, and hopefully win $10,000. So they're really nervous. They're scared. They've never been on camera. So I try to facilitate that to make them relax, to make them feel comfortable, you know, break the ice. Because sometimes I'll go over to them and I'll say, hey, how's everything going? They're like, great, all right, cool. I say, kick ass, take name. And they all kind of look at me like, did he just say that? I go, yeah, beat the other team. And I go over to the other team. And I go, how's everything going? I said, the other team said that they're going to win, so you need to beat them too. So I go back and forth. So it's a friendly it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a competition.
You need that.
Yeah, there's a subtle art to having fun with people and not, you know, where you can poke some fun and they're in on it too and having a good time. So once you find that zone, you know, you can have fun with it, you know?
Exactly. Well, think about it. With common knowledge, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, everyday things that people should know and certain questions and answers. And sometimes they're not even tricky questions, but they get so nervous and you're like, oh, okay, you didn't know that, you know, A, B, C, and D, you know, whatever it may be. And it makes them look a little silly, but then you got to, of course, that being a host, you got to kind of help them out or get them out of them getting upset for losing or missing that question. You know what I mean? So like, ooh, I'm sorry, that sucks. But you know what? Let's figure it out. You know, it's a weird thing. Like you said, people don't really realize how hard hosting a game show really is. Because I have somebody in my ear yelling at me. I have monitors everywhere that I'm reading questions, but also teleprompters and also scores and trying to get these people's last names, which are sometimes not easy to do. Or translations. So it's a lot of stuff that goes on. And we were doing six shows a day. We did it 4.5 weeks. We shot 130 episodes in about 4.5 weeks. This past year.
130 year. Episodes. When you stop and think about that, like other regular shows will have maybe like a 22, 23 episode season, 130 episodes.
It's brutal. It's an ongoing thing. It's fun, again, but that's one of those things where, you know, you see all these shows where you see, you know, Al Trebek, you see Wayne Brady doing, you know, four or five shows, you know, a day and a week and stuff, it does wear and tear on you. I will say that. People are like, oh, it's easy. I'm like, no, it's not.
there's a channel on one of the 15 million channels, and there's a whole bunch of game show channels, but there's one that's exclusively like old password. The Game Show Network obviously does the best, but this is just old stuff from like the 70s and even going back earlier. And you can see, I mean, there's some guys who host who had it and some who didn't. By your reckoning, who's the best game show host of all time?
Oh, gosh. Bob was definitely one of them. Bob Bakker. Wink Martindale was another one. I mean, you go back, you know. I think the old ones were, and even Pat Sajak, you know, it's really interesting to know where he came from. He was a weather guy.
Right.
He was a news weather guy, but he was always cracking jokes and doing funny things. And then that's how he became kind of a hosting Wheel of Fortune. I mean, like, think about that. That's the gig I want. Wheel of Fortune. You just sit there. They spin things. You say, all right, give me an E. Oh, nope, sorry. No
yep.
E.
Yeah.
So, Joey, for those who haven't seen Common Knowledge, what's the format? How does it roll out, and how do you play?
Basically, it's two teams of three. We do three rounds. Two first rounds are multiple choice. The third round is a write-in answer, so the group, the three of them, have to get together. There's sometimes because it's all individual. So say, for instance, they get a multiple choice question, and all three of them have to answer. And if they get all the same answer correct, they actually get bonus points. So you can get bonus points if all three of you have it in common. So that is the cool thing about that. So you never know where it's going to go, because towards the end, you know, at the third round, with the writing round, somebody can mess up on one of the teams and even be in the lead, and someone else can steal those points and then make their points and then win the game. And then it goes to the final bonus round for where the people get a chance to win $10,000. They have to believe seven questions. If they get it right, the amount of time, all questions, as far as the team, it's actually not even time. It's if they get it wrong. So three people can get up there. If maybe one person might get up there and answer all questions. If they do, they win $10,000. If all three of them, of course, get each one wrong answer, then the game's over and they go home and we say, that sucks.
Yeah. That sucks. Get at it. Now, you can also play Common Knowledge on Amazon Alexa, and you are hosting that as well, right?
Yes, again. Yes, you say, hey, Alexa, play. I want to say that loud. Probably someone will go on and hear my house. But I say, hey, Alexa, you know, let's play Common Knowledge. And I come out and host it, basically talk about it. And every day they have a few questions for the day and keep coming back every day for different questions and get more points and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. How is it when the tables are turned on you? Somebody starts throwing you Common Knowledge trivia questions.
Oh, absolutely horrible. No, some of the answers I kind of... The beauty part about it is I truly not. I don't want to know the questions. I really don't want the answers. I don't want to know them because, of course, you know, you don't want to tell something or anybody. Or, you know, I really do play along with that, which is fun. The hardest part is, yeah, being on a show like that, and again, being a host, you know, you try to calm these people down, but it is nerve wracking. I did one time where I hosted a singing bee, and then on the Country Music Network, they came back on with that show. But what is it? Melissa Peterson did it. And she was the host, but then they had an all boy band. So it was like me, Nate from Boys to Men, I believe. It was a couple of the guys from different boy bands. And I was horrible at it. You're supposed to know the lyrics, the songs. Horrible. Huh. Absolutely horrible.
Oh, that's.
So, I mean, I'm very competitive.
Yeah.
I did 25 words or less, and we did pretty good. But it's, you know, I beat Lance, of course. Lance is always. I even did a $100,000 pyramid with Lance, and I beat his ass, too.
Nice. You see, that's it. People don't realize once the pressure's on, like my knowledge of Insignifica is pretty big. But once the pressure's on, I fold.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it hard.
Yeah.
Joey, does NSYNC still reunite from time to time?
Ooh, those guys! Oh, I hate them. Oh.
Those freaking guys.
Basically, no. We still talk. We still have conversations. We're in a group text. We actually do stuff like for merchandise stuff that we still have out right now.
Yeah.
And we have to, of course, agree and approve on all the stuff that goes, you know, out there. But we've actually just did about a year or so ago. We did the Coachella with Ariana Grande, and that kind of opened up people's eyes for possibly even having the four of us come out. We don't know if that's ever going to happen. We don't know if the five of us are going to come out. We've never really had the discussion yet to really see if we want to do something or not. So I know it's never say never, but at the moment, we haven't really had any talks about it. But, you know, again, who the heck knows? Especially with the whole pandemic and everything going on now, the heck knows?
I think time will, it'll come along.
Yeah, and maybe there's an opening for you and Steel Panther. You've worked with them before, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, those are great guys. Steel Panther, oh. Those knuckleheads, yep. Love them. They've been doing a lot of live concerts lately on like streaming and stuff, because obviously they're touring, so they they've been cranking it out there. Oh, God, I love them. Community Coffee is my favorite song.
We'll be checking Common Knowledge. 5:30 is when you can catch it on Game Show Network. So keep it up and good luck with everything, Joey. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you guys so much.
You got it. Common Knowledge.
He's a good host. He's likable.
Yeah. Because I tell you what, I don't know what the name of the is it Buzzer or something? It's just basically, again, as I was just saying to Joey, it's a bunch of old game shows. And man, there were some horrible game show hosts.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. I forget which one my wife and I were watching, and the guy was just miserable. Ugh. And he thought he was funny.
Uh-oh.
And he was just, even the contestants are like, you know, shut up.
That's the worst time.
I want to win money.
Well, our next guest doesn't think he's funny. He thinks he's naked.
Yeah, he's right.
Yeah, he's, well, I don't know. He's naked right now. We never have asked him if he's been naked when we've actually spoke to him. But he's got a movie. It's called Skin, The History of Nudity, which is available from Amazon, iTunes, Voodoo, Fandango, all these streaming platforms. Please welcome Mr. Skin.
Hey, Preston, Steve, how
are
you guys doing?
We're awesome, Mr. Skin. How are you?
Oh, doing great. I never dreamed when I started MrSkin.com 21 years ago, I'd be talking about a real movie documentary that I am the executive producer of. Never dreamed of it, but here we are.
And you know what, Mr. Skin? So I was watching the trailer, and I'm definitely going to watch this because this is a really, and I was reading reviews of it. They're all describing it as a very thoughtful, comprehensive look at nudity in the film industry, and there are I think there's going to be a lot of revelations. Now, you know, we love our movies here, and we love our nudity as well. So a lot of people didn't know that for the longest time, for example, in the earliest days of film, actresses like Joan Crawford, and they started in basically nudies, you know.
That's one of the big surprises that people find out from this documentary. And I should say that we start with Thomas Edison and the invention of the motion picture camera all the way up to the Me Too movement. And what people don't realize, in 1934, the Hays Code came out. That was like where they basically shut down nudity in American cinema from like 1934 all the way to 1963 when Jane Mansfield did Promises, Promises. But what people don't realize, what was going on in movies in like the 1915, for instance, Audrey Munson, this beautiful model actress, was completely nude in the movie Purity. And the very first movie that won an Oscar was 1927's Wings. And Clara Bow, who was the biggest star in the world, was topless in it. And Hedy Lamarr in Ecstasy is a memorable, incredible nude scene from 1932. And that's one of the big revelations from this documentary, is what the heck was going on. People don't realize there was nudity until the Catholic League of Decency came in and said, no more, that's it.
There was a lot of it. There was a famous edited scene out of the original King Kong in which Faye Ray's clothes were being peeled off. If you remember the Johnny Weissmuller Tarzans, you would see Jane basically naked as they swam. And so we always tend to think, okay, everything was very, very provincial and very conservative. But it started off all guns blazing. Then you talked about the Hays Commission. And then we saw a resurgence of this, I guess, probably in the 60s, correct?
Yeah. So the 60s, you know, everything changed in the 1960s. Our morals, you know, Woodstock, all that stuff. So the Hays Code kind of went away, and directors, and Hitchcock really started it. We talk about it in the movie with Psycho. That was like kind of a screw you to the Hays Code, and then it just continued from there. But one of the landmark movies was Jane Mansfield and Promises, Promises, because it was the first time an American actress in a mainstream Hollywood film was nude, and it was just kind of kicked everything off after that. And it's cool. And listen, you know, when you're – this thing chronicles like Thomas Edison to the Me Too movement, and there's so many – nude scenes that we had to get in 2 hours, and we were able to do over 100, which is pretty incredible. Yet it's still, you know, informative and educational, and definitely entertaining. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, the great director we hired, Danny Wolf, and my writing team, some of which used to work at Mr. Skin, which I knew they'd be really good. And I just was able to put a really good team together to make this movie.
No, I love the concept. I love anything that examines, you know, the history of film, and in this way.
One of the reviews that I was reading said, if you want a lesson in copyright law, this is probably a good film to watch, too, because you employ what is called the fair use exemption to have your clips on your site and in the movie. Explain what that is.
Well, if you're reviewing a movie, like think of Siskel and Ebert back in the day, and they're reviewing a movie and they show a minute of the film to review it, they're allowed to do that. They don't have to get the rights to do it. And it's the same thing with this documentary. We had, you know, experts, critics, scholars, film industry veterans, of course, actors and actresses talking about their nude scenes and giving commentary and criticism and all that. And you're allowed to use a tiny, tiny part of a movie to show it. And yeah, that's it. And of course, Mr. Skin for 21 years has run on that basis also. So
thank God for it. Now you have people who are stars and people commenting who have give us a list. You have some luminaries.
Oh my God, it was so cool that like we got Mariel Hemingway, for instance, to be a talking head. Shannon Elizabeth, who you guys know, the girl that did the American Pie nude scene. Pam Grier, who you're very aware of,
legendary.
To name a few, and then we got like, and by the way, this is the history of all nudity, male and female. Yeah. Now, obviously, there was so much more female nudity in history, but we got Peter Bogdanovich, Eric Roberts was awesome. Malcolm McDowell, I thought, stole the show because, I mean, he was in Clockwork Orange, he was in Caligula, and he's so interesting and engaging, and it's fun. Even like Amy Heckerling, who directed Fast Times at Ridgemont High, it was so cool hearing her stories about Phoebe Cates' scene and how that happened, which I consider the my favorite nude scene of all time. And one other thing I should mention to you guys is, like, one of my big concerns in making this, I knew it had never been done before. I wanted to be the first one to do a documentary. And when we decided to do it 2 years ago and started working on it, I was so worried that it would seem kind of tone deaf in the
right.
Me Too era. Like, people would be like, oh, this is so exploitive. And, you know, even with the best intentions, which we truly had, and we were well aware of Me Too, it could easily fall into exploitation. But in what blew me away in these reviews we're getting from, like, Variety and Hollywood Reporter and, gosh, Yahoo and all these people, they were like, you know, it's amazing they were able to do this and it not be exploitive. But I think one of the reasons is we gave voice to a ton of women, whether they were, you know, scholar, film industry, you know, critic, actress, and let them talk about the nudity, because that was a big concern of mine. Is like, we do all this work and people are like, oh, it's just a boob fest, but it is, but it isn't, you know. And that was a difficult line, you know, to walk.
Yeah, I was reading on the Roger Ebert site, you know, obviously.
Oh, that guy was a little, but
it's complimentary in some ways. But I mean, to add credence to what you're saying. Tracy Lords is featured in this. Now, she obviously came from adult films and then transitioned into other films as well. How is she to work with? What's her insight?
Oh, she was wonderful. She, what a career she's had. And we had her in. Actually, we were talking to her about Zach and Mary Make a Porno, the Kevin Smith movie, because we were interviewing him. Because she was one of those very few adult film stars who made the transition into mainstream cinema, and she had some really interesting things to say about the making of Zach and Mary Make a Porno, and Kevin Smith was awesome, but she was really cool.
Do you think that she, and this has sort of been a point of contention, do you think that she masterminded her own career?
I mean, she was
young.
She was so young. I don't know how she would, and it was just a different time, and they didn't have ways. I mean, you couldn't get away with that today with the internet and everything else.
Right.
So I just think she was in a time where you could do that, you know.
It's a fascinating thing. I definitely want to watch this. I love this sort of stuff.
Hey.
Yeah, no, I think you guys would love it, yeah.
Mr. Skim, with taking the look through the history of all this, where do you think we stand with nudity and films today?
Well, one of the things we talk about in the documentary is they now have, because of the Me Too movement, they have these things on the sets of movies and television shows called an intimacy coordinator. Mm-hmm. And what that is when a director makes a movie or is going to make a movie, they agree for the sex scene or the nude scene what the actress is going to do. But many times in history, that changes. And now they have these intimacy coordinators who are there to make sure the director and the actress is agreed upon nude scene or sex scene happens the way they agreed upon it, but also to be there as someone for counsel or to come up with anything that happens during it. And it's such stark contrast to, like, when we talk to Linda Blair from Chained Heat, or you talk to Diane Franklin from Last American Virgin, and what actresses in the 70s and 80s and 90s had to deal with. And the big takeaway is that though there's much more nudity today because of television, actresses are much more empowered. They're much more in control of the nude scene, which in the end is really a great thing. Because why you hear some of these stories from actresses that, like, were forced into doing more nudity than they agreed upon, and they didn't have anyone there to talk to, or it was just a different time. And that's one of the great things about nudity in movies today versus, the 70s, 80s, or 90s.
And speaking of today, and I know you cover some of CGI nudity, and I remember when Game of Thrones was out, and I found out that Lena Headey, they had superimposed her head on an actress's body, and she walked through the town naked and all that. And I was like, I was a little confused by that, because I'm like, look, it doesn't matter. I'm perceiving you as naked, whether or not you actually are or not. I don't see how that would make a difference. But then I'd realize, and maybe it was you, Mr. Skin, who had pointed out, well, maybe her body didn't look quite the way she wanted it to look and wanted it to look way better. And so, therefore, fall in line with that technology.
Yeah, well, Lena Headey, who was in her 40s, had a 24-year-old model named Rebecca Van Cleef do the full frontal walk down the thing. And I think most actresses would make that trade. That's a pretty good trade.
Well, it does. The emergence of the body double, which was on our way to Me Too sensibility, where someone said, where there were people who specialized in being that person. And now, in the time of COVID, we're hearing about people doing romantic scenes with real dolls from behind and sort of
soap operas
and things. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I think, it's funny. Even before COVID, I thought body doubles were going out, and CGI was coming in. I think the future is more CGI than body doubles.
I think you're right.
It gets easier and easier to trick people through CGI, as evidenced by that Game of Thrones scene.
So how do we find your film?
Oh, it's real easy. It's Skin, A History of Nudity in the Movies. You could go to Apple TV, Amazon, iTunes, Fandango, or even, like, if you have DirecTV at home, just search it and it comes right up. I showed off to my wife last night how we could watch it on DirecTV, so she thought that was really cool.
Look, you're legit. You're like Michael Corleone. You brought the family business, and it's legit.
Yeah, who'd have thought? Believe me, I had no clue that either Mr. Skin would be successful or people would like this movie as much as they do.
You now have kinship with Ken Burns, so take that in for.
Nice. No, I'm a big Ken Burns fan, but I am not in that league. So.
Well, I want to see this. This is interesting material, I think. All right, Mr. Skin, I'm sure we'll talk to you very, very soon. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
You bet. All right, Mr. Skin. Yeah, I would like to see that.
I mean, there's two. There were back-to-back documentaries, no pun intended, and they were both called After Porn, and it took and it got great critical write-ups, and it just examined lifestyles of Preston, some of these iconic porn stars of the earliest days. What he's talking about of the 70s, and where their lives were now, and it was riveting. Some were able to process it and move on, and others were just devastated by it.
Right. Speaking of porn stars, our next guest is on the line and ready to go, and he has nothing to do with porn stars whatsoever.
No, he finances the film.
Yeah, that's right.
quietly
he would never participate.
We were bummed out to hear over the weekend that a guy who we became friendly with over the years, Brett Brown, was let go by the Sixers. One of the friendliest guys you'd ever meet. And of course, there's a few other things going on with the Flyers being in the playoffs and so on. So please welcome our good friend, Mr. Michael Amar, NBC Sports. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, friends. How are you?
Wonderful. How's the porn empire going?
Oh, my God.
The porn empire is going great. Give it that over there.
He's directing now.
I'm directing now. It's tough. We start early.
You have to.
Sure, it's a long day. Yes.
You don't want to miss out on that morning wood, as they say. It's a technical term.
It's a long and hard day.
And I really, after a synagogue is when I really get into it.
Sure.
Oh, my God. Oh, my word.
Sorry.
Can I hang up and call again?
Yeah. Well, listen, I'll change gears here real quick, Michael, because for the past few days, especially after Jason Tatum's 34-point performance against the 76ers in Game 1 of the sweeping series, I'm so angry at the entire organization over what they, you know, what their potential was over 3 years ago and where we are right now as an organization. I mean, we had Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, we had the number 3 pick, and we had a ton of assets in other drafts along the way that really could have set the table for us to have a young, dominant team for a long, long time. And here we are, and we don't have anything to show for it. I was all for the process. I really, you know, and you know, there are people that are for it or against it. And I was all for it because we had this opportunity, but it was mishandled, I would say, starting a little over 3 years ago. Would you agree?
I would agree. And remember, Case, you know, I always say there are three important things about running a franchise. You got to assess talent, you got to coach talent, and you got to be talent. And to me, of those three things, I would argue that the most important part is assessing the talent, is knowing who you've got, knowing exactly who's walking into your gym and whether or not they can give you a great career and where to draft them. And if you can't do that well, then I think ultimately your franchise is going to run off the rails. I was not a process guy, only because I'm not saying it didn't work, because my goodness, you got Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons out of it. I guess maybe that's the bottom line. And Joel Embiid is 25 years old. He's still got plenty of time, barring injury, to be healthy. Ben Simmons is what, 24, 25 or so. And so, you know, as long as they stay healthy, and that's a question mark, certainly. It has been with Embiid. It has been with Simmons. Once again, it is with Simmons as he goes through off-season surgery. But when you look at the drafts, it's in 2015, Jahlil Okafor with Kristaps Porzingis or Devin Booker still on the board. 2014, they took Embiid. Remember, they took Embiid with the third pick, because the first two teams didn't want him because he was injured. If he was not injured, he would not have been on the board at the number 3 pick for the Philadelphia 76ers. So they took a gamble there. It paid off. He's one of the great players of the NBA. And you know, he's I hope he's going to be a stud for years to come. But when you look at decimating a franchise for 3 or 4 seasons, just systematically shipping off any assets and getting them out so you can win less and less games. Remember, they won 19 games, they won 18 games, they won 10 games, and to get all those picks that they accrued. So, and if you don't assess the talent properly, 2017, Brian Colangelo, then the general manager of the team, trades with the dreaded, the hated Boston Celtics, trades, the Sixers had the number 3 pick, they trade the number 1, and they take Markelle Fultz, and the Celtics take Jason Tatum. Who would you rather have, Jason Tatum or Markelle Fultz? I know who I'd rather have, and Markelle Fultz isn't even a Sixer anymore. So and then you've got Bam Adebayo and Donovan Mitchell in that draft, and those three, Tatum, Adebayo, and Mitchell, have all been all-stars in the 2017 draft.
Let me ask you a question, Michael, because I'm more peripheral when it comes to this than Casey and Nick. But as an observer and interested and fascinated with the teams and obviously wanting them to do well, it's such a frustrating thing to see talented players come in and then be constantly injured over and over and over. So the dream or the perception that, oh, this is going to be great, just keeps getting kneecapped, no pun intended. Is it also when you're selecting talent, do you immediately go for the person who's, you know, looks like, okay, this is everything? Does it help to take someone less on obvious talent and more on durability with talent?
I think the durability is important. And when you're looking at centers, certainly, how many centers have you seen that just have not had the career that players at other positions have had? It is a brutal, position, slogging up and down that court and just getting beat down night after night, and even though you've got size, so do the other players that are opposing you. And so that's a tough one. I mean, you can get a guy like Jeff Ruland, who was unbelievable. The Sixers made a trade for way back when, and he never played a game for him. You know, they traded for him. They traded away a lot of their future fortunes for him, and it never materialized because he had bad knees and he never played for the Sixers. And that was a trade. So it's. That's a tough one. To me, you got to go with the talent. And even with Markelle Fultz, the guy I've been talking about at the University of Washington, I'm sure a lot of teams and a lot of critics would have said he was a slam dunk, no-brainer. You pick him, and he'll lead your franchise at the point for, you know, the next 10 years at least. And it just didn't happen like that. So can you blame Brian Colangelo at the time was the GM? Yeah, because that's what he's paid for. You know, somehow you have to know that this guy is mentally not ready, at least at that time, nor in my opinion is he still ready to play in the NBA. You look at the other three guys who were on the board you could have gotten, and, man, you had Donovan Mitchell. Well, my goodness, what your franchise would look like. So
2020 hindsight and everything, you know, and there's only so much you can do, right? So the next question is, where do we go next? And Tyronn Lue's name has been floated out there, and Jay Wright's name has been floated out there. And if I'm Jay Wright, there are only two reasons why I would take the job. One is they back an armor truck to my car, and they dump as much money as I could possibly ever dream of, and then I take it for that reason. And then two, a new challenge, a new path in your career, and taking your talents to the NBA as opposed to the NCAA. If you're the Sixers, Michael, who do you hire and why? And if you're Jay Wright, would you consider taking the job?
Well, I would consider taking the job if I'm Jay Wright. Jay Wright has said before that the NBA, quote, intrigues him, not necessarily the Philadelphia 76ers. To coach in your hometown, and this is his hometown, is a completely different deal. And he has coached in his hometown, I guess, because Villanova is also an area team. It's a Big Five team, and he's won two championships here, been to a third. And I think if anybody who could do that and do that successfully, it is Jay Wright. Jay is just, you know, I think you all know what kind of an amazing person he's at the Camp Out for Hunger. I know you see him every year. He's just an incredible human being, and he's the real deal. And he has a way of communicating not just with athletes but with people. The question is, you know, it's Jay Wright and the Villanova Wildcats right now. It's not that way when you're in the NBA. You know, it's Mike Krzyzewski and Duke. It's not that way in the NBA. I mean, certainly if the Sixers got Jay Wright, everybody would be going nuts. But when you have to coach the big money athletes who you know, they're there, they're getting paid more than you, as much as Jay would be getting paid. I would venture to say that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, my goodness, Simmons is averaging, when his new extension starts, it's going to be almost $34 million per year, and Embiid is the same. So, you know, you got guys who make that kind of money. It's like, hey, you ain't telling me what to do, man.
I got years
and I got money. Yes.
And Michael, how long is that going to last? Like, look at, you know what I mean? Brett Brown's gone after, what was it, seven seasons? You know?
Yeah,
hometown guy coaching the Sixers isn't going to last forever.
Right. Well, it lasts as long as you win. I mean, that's the only thing. You look at Greg Popovich in San Antonio, who certainly has struggled over the last couple of seasons, but coached all those teams to championships. He had the players, and you have Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and all those guys that he had. Well, you tend to be able to coach, if you're a good coach, teams to championships. You look at Steve Kerr at Golden State. I mean, he's not going anywhere, even though they had a horrible season because they had guys injured. So it really is about the wins and losses. It really is about the excitement that the team provides and that fans think the team has a shot to win. And when Sam Hinkie came here in 2013 and he just, you know, systematically guys got traded away. He traded guys he drafted guys to trade them away. And they had Michael Carter Williams. He was the rookie of the year. I'm not saying he was going to be a Hall of Famer, believe me, but they picked him. They traded him. And so what they wanted to do was get, you know, get as low a record as they could so they could get as many top drafts and top draft picks as they could. And in that regard, mission accomplished.
Hey.
But when you look at how long they've been at it and where the Sixers have not even been to a conference finals, and this year they get bounced, albeit a weird year. You know, you got a pandemic, you're playing in a bubble. That's a bizarre thing. I get it, but all the other teams are playing in a bubble too.
Right, so. Michael. You mentioned that, you know, the stars and their salaries. What do coaches pull down? What's a good coach pull down?
A good coach will he'll pull down, you know, 15, 20 million.
Okay. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Chump change.
And Brett Brown still. I think he gets paid for two more seasons, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, what does a good NCAA coach make?
Same. Not that much.
Okay.
But I'm sure, like Mike Krzyzewski, I'd have to look it up. But I'm sure Mike Krzyzewski makes some pretty good coin, and you know, and they deserve it. And when you got when you are leading your team to NCAA appearances and NCAA championships, then that's such an important thing for your school. John Chaney, the great former head coach of the Temple Owls, used to say. In fact, he said it on the day that he retired, when Fran Dumphy came in to take his place. He said, "I always said that if I could get the name of my school on national television being mentioned for 2.5 or 3 hours on a Saturday afternoon or a Friday night, if I could get, that's the best advertising I could get for my school." Yeah. And I say, here, you know, absolutely.
Okay.
All right, all right, when it comes to college coaching versus professional coaching, I feel like it's harder to be a college coach. I feel like there's more work that goes into being a college coach because of all of the recruiting. And I know that there's recruiting that happens in professional basketball, but I don't know. Am I just talking out my ass right now, or do you think it's more daunting to be a college coach than is a pro coach?
I think it is. Both. It's a double-edged sword for both jobs. I think if you're a college coach, you know, you've got to go into families' living rooms and sell your school and sell yourself and say,
yeah,
this is the reason that you can leave your son with me, and he will be a successful student and a successful athlete. And let's face it, there's some kids who come in there, they're not interested in being a successful student. They know that they're leaving for the NBA in short order. But you've got to do that every single year if you are a college head coach. And you got to sweet talk it, and Jay has done that. Someone like Jay Wright, someone like Mike Krzyzewski. By the way, Mike Krzyzewski, I got $8.98 million on Krzyzewski.
Whoa.
Among the 28 highest paid college basketball coaches in 2020. So,
wow.
So he's number one. John Calipari is not from Kentucky, number two at $8 million. And
that's
well, you know, the cost of living in Kentucky is.
I'll tell you, it's tough, man. You live in Kentucky.
It's hard to get by. Well, we also have to ask you about the Flyers and you know, your assessment of where things stand.
They're gonna be fine.
I thought they looked good last night. Honestly, listen, 4-0. I don't think was indicative of how they played last night. They were definitely outplayed in the first period. I think the second and third periods, I think they outplayed the Islanders. The Islanders just got two really, really good looks at the net. I don't want to call them lucky, but they were definitely opportunistic, and there just so happened to be a player there to bury it.
Well, you know what Pierre would say is if the pitching holds up.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
I thought Pierre would say, c'est son toit, les sons, put it in the net.
Exactly.
Sorry, a different Pierre.
Yes.
Different Pierre, yeah.
Well, Michael,
different Pierre.
11 goals in their last 7 games, right, I think? And so they were so hot coming out of the bubble and the playing round, you know, the round robin. They were scoring against really good teams. And against Montreal and again last night, they just haven't been scoring. So, listen, it's much easier for me to sit here and say all they really need to do is get some goals.
Yeah.
But once the offense starts clicking like it did in game, 5 against the Canadiens when they scored some power play goals, that, to me, is the secret to actually having some success in this series.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of a hangover from having beaten the Canadians, and they're excited about that. That now they move on. But I've got two numbers for you that you can take these to the bank. Here we go.
All right.
And then those numbers. No, who's writing? I heard.
I'm writing them down.
I'm writing them down right now.
Don't write them down. This is from Big Philly. Are you kidding me? Don't write those. No, I'm kidding. Since January 7th, in games after their last 10 losses, the Philadelphia Flyers are 10-0. And not only are they 10-0, they have outscored the opposition 44-19 in that span since January 7th, and we are in August. Weird playing hockey in August, man, I'll tell you that. Yeah. I feel like we're talking about the Olympics or something.
Yeah.
The Flyers are 10-0 and have outscored the opposition 44-19. And they did not have a great game last night. I like what Alain Vigneault did. He made that desperation move. He pulled Carter Hart with 7-plus minutes left. It didn't work. But you know, you're trying to shake up your team, trying to get it to move, and they did not have sustained attack, the Flyers, last night. And they just had a lack of solid puck possession when they were in the offensive zone, eh? And so when you don't have that, I was just talking hockey.
It's organization, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, organization.
Offensive zone. Yeah, that one I don't know, but that's okay.
Biscuit in the basket.
That's right.
The Bruins. That one I know.
Yeah. You know that.
All right, but I like your assessment. They're going to be fine.
They're going to be fine. Yep.
That's cool confidence you built up working in the adult film industry.
That's right.
Exactly right.
It's
all over, man.
All right. Well, listen, brother, we got to run. We got Colonel Sanders from
Spaceballs.
From Spaceballs coming up. We got to talk to him.
Got to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Have to do that.
No, but listen. We wanted to touch base. What should we keep an eye out for you, sir, as far as broadcasts go?
I'll tell you. Thank you very much, Preston, for asking me that question. I only have an explanation that'll take 15 minutes. Tonight, the Philadelphia Phillies, man. That's what we're about this evening. Philadelphia Phillies. You got also get ready for the Flyers. Unfortunately, the Sixers are gone, as we've discussed. But the Phillies this evening are playing the Washington Nationals, and Ricky Pitalico and I will have pregame live for you at 6 p.m. Phillies at 7 o'clock. And I want to say that the Phillies, I can't quite say it with a conviction about the Flyers, but I want to say the Phillies are going to be fine, too. I think it was a nice move picking up those three relief pitchers, and they can score runs, as we have seen. They have some starting pitching. They need a little bit more, but the relief pitching has been really woeful, and they picked up three veterans, and they got their first win with those guys the other night against the Atlanta Braves, and that team's no joke. So it's going to be exciting, it says right here, with regard to the Phils.
Excellent.
So we'll see you tonight.
All right, my man. Thank you.
Thank you all.
NBC Sports Philadelphia and adult film star Michael Barkan. Thank you, bud.
Talk to
you. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Yes, we need to take a quick break. I do want to remind you, a Tattoos Day, free tattoo. Chance for winning a $350 gift certificate from our friends at the Floating World Tattoo and Piercing. Their location is 29 South Street in Philadelphia. So text word tattoo to 39333. When we come back, yes, we're going to have actor George Weiner, character actor, been in tons of stuff.
Yeah.
One of the most notable from Spaceballs, Colonel Sanders, and others. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Preston and Steve Show Podcast. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
We're excited to have our next guest on. He's been, I think the technical term is, a gazillion television shows throughout the years.
And even that doesn't quite describe it.
And then films galore, and there are loads to talk to him about. And one does stand out in particular. My kids, and I'm going to play a clip just before we go to him. My kids discovered on their own, without my help at all, Spaceballs probably 6-7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it became the go-to thing to watch in our movie, despite there's a couple of, questionable words at the time. They were younger when we, but we didn't care. So much fun. And his character is so great in this movie. I'm going to play this clip. We're going to welcome him. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff in his career, but I have to play this clip.
No.
That's the wrong thing. How about this?
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders?
chicken. Prepare ship. Prepare ship for ludicrous speed. Fasten all seatbelts. Seal all entrances and exits. Close all shops in the mall. Cancel the free-range circus. Secure all animals in the zoo.
Give me that, you petty excuse for an officer. Now hear this. Ludicrous speed.
Sir, hadn't you better buckle up?
Now buckle this. Ludicrous speed. Go!
Then it just gets ridiculous after that. We want to welcome the man who portrayed Colonel Sanders in that classic film. Please give some love to Mr. George Weiner.
Yeah.
Good morning, George.
Good morning. Thank you for playing that. You've got me laughing before I even start talking.
Oh, no. You're the one that got us laughing, man. I'm telling you. And thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. We're reaching out to one of the things we love to do, George, is talk to people who have had a rich history in character acting and in some cases are just known as that guy, you know, for people who haven't done the research to find out names and so on. But we find so many great stories from people who have had a career such as yourself. And it's still going all the way up to, I mean, my family and I, we watched The Umbrella Academy, and lo and behold, there you are in an episode. So you're still working as much as ever, it seems like.
I am still working. I'm not sure about as much as ever. We're working on that part of it, but I'm absolutely still working, yes.
You know, I became aware of you years ago, and obviously, as Preston says, you've just been in so much, but you were sort of, I guess it was on Hill Street Blues was the first time. And you know, seeing you, you were a reoccurring character. I think it was D.A. Bernstein. And that ensemble and that whole thing, I guess it started a friendship with Stephen Bochco because you ended up in a number of his shows, Doogie Howser, NYPD Blue, L.A. Law. So what was it like at the beginning getting, at that time, such meaty roles on television?
Well, it was pretty special, especially when you work with somebody like Stephen. You know, I'm a fan, too. I think actors are fans. When you get to do a television show that you watch and you're a fan of, it's special. And everybody wanted to work with Stephen and certainly be on Hill Street. And yes, Stephen was the kind of producer that not only did you love working for him at that point when you know, whatever show it was, you were going to be part of his family. And that meant that if there was a show following that Stephen thought you were right for, you were going to work on it. And so I was one of many that you would see that name come up again and again on Stephen's shows. So that's who Stephen was, and that's one of the reasons that everyone loved him so much.
Yeah, the thing with it, too, is that he'd take people who you would normally not see, types you would normally not see on television in roles that were substantive roles. You know, we were kind of used to sort of soap opera-y looking people, and that is not to say you couldn't. You know, be a leading man on a soap opera, but I'm just saying you're
you can say it, please. Say it.
You were given, trust me, I'm in the same world you live in, but a more substantive role that was just so engaging and it made everything resonate so much more. You were able to do that and that also do comedy so adroitly.
Well, I honestly, that was one of the things that I was told very early on. One of the things that happens out here is they will kind of typecast you, and the only way you get away from it is if you can manage to do both comedy and drama, then that will get you out of the typecast. And fortunately, I've been able to do that, according to other people who hire me. So, yes, it makes a big difference.
George, you know, I mentioned my kids at the top of the interview, and I was absolutely surprised at how much they were taken by Spaceballs because the movie had come and gone for me, which, by the way, let's remind everyone, it came out well past the Star Wars thing being over, and I thought it was a late shot by Mel Brooks to go for that parody, and yet it did okay, but over time it resonated, and I was blown away that my kids found that movie so entertaining. Are you surprised by the fascination of that movie as well?
I think we all were, and including Mel. Mel will say that it may not have been the best film he ever made, but it has the longevity in that sense. Spaceballs is it's remarkable how often I am approached by someone who want me to, you know, meet his son or a grandson. It just continues on through generations. It's wonderful. And you're right. It's very special that way. And Mel has said that many times. It just has this longevity that no one expected. I'm very excited that it does.
If you look at it, though, it's sort of like an extended Your Show of Show Sid Caesar skits, like, you know, a parody.
Yeah,
And you, I think you became, you were on Mel's radar after you appeared in My Favorite Year, which was basically a loving look at that show of shows and those writers. And so how did you get the initial call? Did you go in and read for Mel, or how did it work out?
Oh, it's actually interesting because I had done a film with Mel before that, To Be or Not to Be, was a Mel film, and I had I had no idea that I was on Mel's radar whatsoever, but I had done a film that was that the Brooks Company had produced, and forgive me, I love the film and it just went out of my head for a moment here. Don't ever get old.
Well, didn't he produce Elephant Man? You weren't in that, were you?
No, wasn't that one. but I, of course, Mel had seen it, and there was a moment in the movie that that he particularly liked, and I got a call from my agent saying, Mel Brooks wants to meet you, and I said, you know, I thought he was kidding. And I went up, I met him, and it was my performance in that film that he brought me into his office, and he wanted me to be in To Be or Not to Be, and then that led to Spaceballs. So, Mel saw me as a second banana, and which is something I've always loved doing. And that's what got me with Rick. Rick Moranis in Spaceballs is, as we all know, was brilliant, and to be his second banana was I thought, something that I really looked forward to doing. And working with Rick was very special. And, of course, working with Mel was and is special.
Georgia, I like to believe that you guys had a lot of fun on that set. Please let me have that fantasy. Was it indeed the case?
You may believe it. Please do. Mel used to say, we'd start laughing. And Mel would say, look, we're making a comedy, laugh. What do you know? If you ruin it, take, because you couldn't stop laughing. And, yeah, Mel comes on the set funny. He leaves the set funny, and that's your day. He knows what he wants, and he's tough about getting it. That's a reality. But you love every minute of working with him.
Well,
absolutely,
you're dealing with the best of the best, and obviously there was a budget on that, and to the actual scene of ludicrous speed and the physical effects involved. Describe for us what it was like, because it seems almost impossible that they pulled that off, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. Well, it is. I don't know. Mel came up to me and said, tomorrow we're going to do this scene at ludicrous speed, so you're going to be going 1,000 miles an hour. So I found myself in front of the mirror that night, pulling my mouth apart, trying to figure out how the hell I'm supposed to do that. If you didn't know what you were doing when you got on there, Mel would show you. Let's say, you would quickly understand what he wanted. He was great that way. So, but yeah, it was, all that, how they ever pulled that off. I mean, when I saw it, I went, how do they do that too? Because a lot of that was beyond what actors can do. And of course, Rick, Rick getting up and wandering around going, smoke if you got him.
It's the best. It's the best.
It was a perfect cap to that scene. And, there are so many of those moments in those scenes that live on. It's wonderful.
If I were an actor, I would have found probably the most difficult dialogue moment, and maybe just from laughing alone during it, was when you guys have the exchange about the instant video cassettes. Because it's so confusing that the conversation loops around. Were you able to nail that in a short amount of takes, or did that take a few?
It took a few, but it was really one of Mel's favorite scenes, and that put a lot of pressure on you. It's like an old vaudeville scene.
Yeah.
That moment, as we I think we know, and so to get the rhythm of it right, But it, at the same time, we knew what we wanted to do. We loved doing it, though. You know, and again, Mel kind of led us through it. But, yeah, that scene, I think, for many of us, was our favorite one to do. Absolutely.
So I know you've done a few conventions, and you have such a vast amount of pop culture stuff that people will be drawn to you for. Besides Spaceballs, what do you get recognized for? Where do you feel the level of adoration is second on another project of yours? What comes in second?
Oh, well, that's interesting. You know, as far as fans are concerned, sometimes it's a little different than, you know, where my heart is.
Right.
In some ways, you know, you're right, absolutely right about that. You know, I loved working with Coen Brothers, and for instance, that's sort of a holy grail for a lot of actors out here. I think if I were to mention things that people love when you go to autograph shows and so on, that would be things like, Hill Street Blues is certainly some of it, but a lot of, you know, it's more into the comedies. I played Archie Bunker's doctor in a couple of episodes.
Yes,
people like to think, remember that one. It's the older TV comedy stuff that people loved.
Just to put Fletch, in perspective,
the movie Fletch. I would say the movie Fletch for TV.
Fletch, you know, yes.
Okay.
I was wondering if that was the case. I'm just going to read quickly some of the shows you've been on: The Odd Couple, Ironside, Adam's Rib, Columbo, Kojak. The Bob Newhart Show, Ellery Queen, a show I used to love, Sanford and Son, McMillan and Wife, Hawaii 5-0, Emergency, All in the Family, WKRP, Alice, Soap, Lou Grant. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
People are texting in about MASH, about
MASH
the fact that,
well, yeah.
that you were MASH. How many episodes of MASH did you do?
I did one because
That's
I was
it?
A bad guy.
Oh.
You know, I couldn't, I was a snitch.
Okay. Man.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that episode.
Rockford
I remember
Files.
You in it. Yeah.
Yes. Wait, so you've worked, I mean, honestly, to work with people like James Garner and Jack Lemmon.
Well, see, that's it. I mean, that's, you know, you're still a fan when you walk on, and you can't tell them that until you're done. You know, it's inappropriate. You have to get out there and work with them. You're a co-worker, which is hilarious when you're, you know, it's Jim Garner. But one of the great things in those days was you could do a show every year and come back even as a different character.
Yeah.
Of course, now you can't do that anymore. And so you could do multiple episodes of things like, working with Jim on Rockford Files and so on, or working, you know, with Jack Klugman. And honestly, they became, I won't use the word friends. I think that would be too much for me to claim that. But they were people that that really were helpful to me in many ways, and I felt a friendship with through working with them multiple times over the years, and that to me was special because I grew up, you know, these guys were my heroes, and
God,
all
yeah.
of a sudden, you know, they're calling me by my first name even though they got it wrong.
they tried.
That's an interesting.
That's all they care.
An interesting dynamic you mentioned about the state of television today, and the fact the way it was when you were coming up, in the fact that you could star as a different person on the same show later that season or in the next season. But now we have thousands of television shows. Is that more advantageous for the working actor today? I mean, more people are getting a shot. It seems like it would be.
Yeah, I think it is. There's an awful lot more product out there. There's no question about it, and I think that's great. And yes, it's changed, but I think it's changed in a healthier way in terms of that. I miss the old days and how that worked. But, I think there's no question that there's much more product, much more availability for actors. It's probably straightened itself out in some ways. I think it was probably a little strange to do what we did, but we all loved it.
Probably the ability to make an impact or an imprint on an audience was more when there was less. You had to rise to the challenge. However, there's more opportunity now. Now, I need to ask you, because I brought this up to Preston. I don't know if this is apocryphal or not, but was there, in fact, an additional ending to Spaceballs we never saw?
Yeah.
Can you tell us what that was?
Well, sure. I mean, when I say ending, it was only the punchline at the end. I will just say that. The actual, you know, we come out of the ship there and we land, and, you know, they have the thing where you go, there goes the neighborhood because the Spaceballs are here.
Right.
And Mel, the alternative to that was a different line where we came off and we're saying, where are we? And Mel, the three of us, and one of us says, we're in California. And Mel looks around and goes, let's pollute it. And I loved that line. But then, of course, when we ended up with the other one, I went, well, that's pretty funny, too. So, you know, Mel has a lot of funny endings in his, he chose the right one, I think.
George, did you ever have any encounters with Daphne Zuniga or John Candy or some of these people that you never really shared any screen time with in the film, unless I'm forgetting about some scenes?
No, I would see them occasionally. Yes, we miss John, of course. It was a great loss. And autograph shows, I will see people from those days, and that's always fun. You know, it's a great reunion for all of us to go to these autograph shows, that's probably the best time I see. I've seen Mel, of course, over the years. And that's always, it's always great to see Mel. Mel is Mel. You come in laughing, you go out laughing. It's just who he is.
Speaking of people that you encounter, and take this with a grain of salt because it's from IMDb, but it says that you may be a distant relative of Arnold Schwarzenegger and you guys are close, close friends. Is that true?
Yeah. No, it isn't. You couldn't get distant enough. Forgive me. I'm getting in trouble for that. I don't know what that came from. I asked my wife, who's been married for 47 years. You never told me, you know. And I said, I don't know what. Not true.
We encounter that often on IMDb, but we have to ask because it seemed like, wow, that I would not have made that connection.
Yeah.
Because obviously we're talking to you because we're huge fans of your work, and besides the Umbrella Academy, what can we see you in that's out and about or soon to be out and about?
Well, I did, just before, you know, the industry has shut down, of course, and it is shut down. I did a Grace and Frankie with Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda that hasn't aired yet. We shot it literally just before everything shut down. So now we're all just sitting and waiting.
Are things starting to get, because we're hearing that, for example, The Matrix has gone back into production and some shows are, you know, they have sort of their production bubbles where everyone is taking COVID tests and they're getting back up and running. Are you seeing signs of that?
I'm hearing about it much more than I'm seeing.
Okay.
Honestly, I know people are really anxious to do it, but at the same time, most of us are going, well, I'm anxious to do it, but I enjoy breathing, too. So I, you know,
it's always a big plus.
The price to pay here. Yes,
yeah, yeah.
You know.
Hey, George, to your knowledge, has there been any other characters that you've played besides Colonel Sanders that has ended up as a Halloween costume?
No. I think Colonel Sanders stands alone as far as Halloween costumes go.
We put together this event every year. It's called the Cardboard Classic. We go to a mountain and people create these large contraptions to go down the hill with. They create them out of cardboard, string, glue, tape, things like that. And without fail, almost every year, some representation of Spaceballs. People put craftware, whether it's the Winnebago or Spaceballs 1 or whatever it may be, and they come dressed as you guys, as the characters. So that's got to be pretty cool knowing that.
It is. Absolutely it is. Listen, an actor would be lying if he didn't say to have been a part of something that has that kind of longevity and people care that much about it in generation to generation. And you know, listen, you played me a clip. If I turn TV on and there it is, I sit down and watch because it's funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rick and Mel and John, I mean, these people are, you know, they're just wonderful in it. And So, yeah, it's certainly very special to me to have been a part of that, absolutely.
It holds up. So does Fletch. I watched Fletch a week and a half ago. My friend and coworker Casey gave it to me. I didn't own it, and so he gifted it to me. And your role in it is hilarious, and obviously Chevy's is as well. Were you ever going to be in the other Fletch movies that were supposed to be made, or was that one and done for you?
We actually did a season.
He was in the second one.
Yeah.
We did a Fletch, you know, they changed the title, or I changed it. We did a sequel to it, Fletch Lives or Fletch 2, and I kept the same character in it there. So we did two of them. The first one was absolutely one of the great comedies of all time for me. Chevy's phenomenal, and yeah, it was great to be part of that, and yes, to have my character continue. But that was, we just did the two, and that was it. And so, you know, I know there's talk now of doing some TV thing, but that has nothing to do with what we did. It's a whole different kind of show, from my understanding. But that was great, too. And I that's a second to Spaceballs in terms of comedy and having been part of something.
Let me ask you, you know, George Quentin Tarantino is known for his, you know, he's a big ravenous pop culture guy, and there's so many directors now that are just ravenous pop culture fans as well. And so he'll reach out to people that he just, you know, enjoyed in a movie or so on and so forth. Have you ended up on the radar, to use that term again, of perhaps one of the new directors who was perhaps a huge Spaceballs fan, or do you sometimes get, these directors, these new crop of directors reaching out to you because they're fans of your work?
I have, but they want to go to lunch.
They just want to hear the stories.
They just want to have the stories.
I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. And all they do is pay the check and thank me.
Yeah, well, at least they pay. That's cool. Yes. Yeah,
yeah. They do pay. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Colonel Sanders was at least good for free lunch from time to time.
Yes, that's right. I get a free lunch.
Yeah. Wow. Well, listen, we appreciate you taking the time. We just wanted to reach out. We're making a list of people that we've always wanted to talk to, and you happen to be one of them. So we'll keep an eye out for future projects, and we just thank you for all the great years of entertainment, George.
Well, listen, it's been my pleasure, and thank you for asking me, and stay safe.
You we do will. The same. Thank you, George Weiner, guys. Yeah. We appreciate it. I know we gotta do the Bizarre File.
Yeah.
I'm gonna play another clip from Spaceballs, so this is another one of the great ones.
Oh, leave me alone. No, kiss me. No, no, yes, no, no, yes, no, yeah. Oh. Your helmet is so big.
Hard helmet, what? You need it on the bridge, sir.
Knock on my door! Knock next time!
Yes, sir.
Did you see anything?
No, sir. I didn't see you playing with your dolls again.
Good!
That is one of my absolute favorite scenes of that movie. Again. Oh, my God. It's great. That was a great conversation. All right. We're really late for this. It's almost 10:30.
Oh, my God.
Haven't even done the Bizarre File. All right. Here we go.
Now, WMMR presents Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
All right. Quick Bizarre File brought to you by HERS. Pick up a specially marked bag of HERS today for a chance to win $10,000. Take your summer to the next level. Full rules and details at summer.hers.com. Hers, forever good. Well, a supermarket worker dropped dead in the aisles, but his callous bosses kept the store open, and they covered his corpse with umbrellas while people were shopping around him.
Like a new display.
Yes. Sales manager Manuel Cavalcante suffered a heart attack while working in Brazil at a store called Carrefour.
This is a great chance to move some of those umbrellas.
Colleagues desperately tried to save his life, but he passed away in front of horrified shoppers. However, instead of closing the business, the store staff continued to serve customers after covering the body with three umbrellas and surrounding it with cardboard boxes. They opened up the umbrellas and set them out.
Sure, of course.
The shocking incident happened on August 14th, but has only just come to light following a deluge of criticism on social media. Carrefour Brazil has now apologized by admitting the handling of the outrageous incident was inappropriate.
Well, they're also catching crack because they put up a sign that said an umbrella sale to die for.
First aid was given and an ambulance was immediately called, and the supermarket giant said that they had insisted they followed guidelines to not remove the body from its place. They have now changed their guidelines to include the closure of the store in future similar cases.
Okay, so if employees drop dead, they close for a little bit.
Yes, that's what they'll do. And you know what? We'll do this super short. We'll just do one more quick story because we've got a lot to get to. But this is actually a good thing that came out of this. And it took place in Waymart, Pennsylvania. A group of scouts likely saved a woman's life after she fell underneath a moving riding tractor.
Oh, my God.
Emily Calder, Hannah Smith, and Angelina Krug were all riding in a golf cart, and they saw a maintenance worker who had become trapped under the tractor. The woman was carrying a hose in her arm, and the hose was caught. One of the girls said that we just grabbed the mower and we actually looked at the woman and her arm was caught underneath the mower. She was going down under it and they had to stop the riding tractor. So to do that, they placed rocks underneath the wheels to hold the tractor in place. What Smith said, us grabbing the mower stopped it from pulling her under and potentially killing her. She was saying that she heard a snap in her arm.
Oh.
And her arm was really hurting, and you could see the swelling right away. I was just using my knowledge of emergency preparedness, first aid, life-saving, all those merit badges that we prepare for, Krug said. By the way, Calder, Smith, and Krug are female Boy Scouts who hope to become Eagle Scouts this fall.
And they performed a field hysterectomy, correct?
Yes, they did. Very quickly, she...
I don't need this!
No longer needs that. And that is what I have in the bizarre file, the very short bizarre file. Kathy, we need a number caller for Tattoos Day. No, we don't. We choose that randomly.
Yes, we do.
Thinking of the secret text word. That's tomorrow.
Okay.
Why did you even bring it up, Kathy? Oh,
this is your last chance to text in for Tattoos Day. Text the word tattoo to 39333. We'll see if you win in a little bit a $350 gift certificate from Floating World Tattoo and Piercing, 29 South Street in Philadelphia. 1729 South Street in Philadelphia. We'll be back in just a moment. Music News, Trash coming up.
Get social with Preston and Steve and WMMR. Facebook, Twitter, you know, the usual places.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
I want to point out that we do have a new Daily Rush video. And the video is called The Posters in Casey's Room. Says Casey wasn't allowed to have pretty girl posters, but he did have posters of some hot apostles. So you can watch that video now at PrestonandSteve.com. It is sponsored by Punchline Philly, Fishtown's first comedy club, restaurant, and bar. And if you haven't seen it yet, watch the birthday video that I made for Kathy. It's her birthday today.
Oh, great.
So that's at PrestonSteve.com. So you can watch
she's
at your leisure.
Aging like fine wine.
Yes, she is.
Like a 200-year-old bottle of wine.
200-year-old bottle of wine.
She's doing great.
Old vinegary.
She's not sick anymore.
Yeah, we're happy about that.
Well sort of.
You feel better.
Yeah.
Yes, I do feel better, yeah.
Okay. Lesson question prize today is a digital download of the gripping psychological thriller The Vanish with Anne Heche and Thomas Jane. So, question that I have for you this morning is, who did Gene Simmons steal the blood-spitting stunt from? 215-263-WMMR. That was early this morning. It's Gene's birthday today, 71, and we found out he stole the blood-spitting stunt from someone else. Who was it? 215-263-WMMR. If you know, you should call now, and we're going to do the trash while you're calling in.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
All right, let's see what stories you have today, Steve. What's going on?
Well, 28-year-old American Idol star Colton Dixon and his wife Annie welcomed twin baby girls on Saturday. Dixon says the maternity hospital went to great lengths to maintain his anonymity by not doing anything.
Oh, my
God. Leonardo DiCaprio spotted walking along Malibu Beach with his decades younger girlfriend, model actress Camilla Maroney. According to witnesses, DiCaprio would pause periodically to kiss Maroney in her stroller.
Oh.
And finally, 78-year-old actor and pilot Harrison Ford flew his son Liam on his private plane to Amherst, Massachusetts, in order to drop him off at college. Things mostly went off without a hitch, and Liam was eventually able to catch a bus out of Baltimore. And that's your Hollywood Trash.
All right, we shall see if you have the answer to this question. Who did Gene Simmons steal the blood-spitting stunt from? 215-263-WMMR, our number, and it's Joey that we go to for the answer. Hey, Joey.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, Joey. All right, who did Gene Simmons steal the blood-spitting stunt from?
Frankie Valli.
Frankie Valli. Yeah! You're correct, my man. Hang on. We're going to give you the digital download of The Vanished, starring Anne Heche and Thomas Jane. A family vacation takes a terrifying turn when two parents discover their young daughter has vanished without a trace. Own it or rent it on digital today. Rated R from Paramount Pictures.
Now, Preston and Steve's Music News on 93.3 WMMR.
Bronchitis. All right, let's begin. Oh, by the way, it's brought to you by Cinch, propane tank home delivery service. It brings propane right to your doorstep, and you can place your order at cinch.com. The Killers just released their new album, which is called Imploding the Mirage, on Friday, and they've already planned the release to release another one. NME reports that the Killers frontman, Brandon Flowers, said the new project will be released in about 10 months, and they have about 50 songs to choose from. Wow.
They're saying this new album is absolutely one of their best. It's getting rave reviews.
Good. Flowers said that there's no thread between Imploding the Mirage and the new album, the latter of which will be inspired by his new home in Utah. The new trailer for the upcoming Ozzy Osbourne A&E biography, The Nine Lives of Ozzy Osbourne, was released yesterday. The show is set to debut September 7th. In the clip, Ozzy addresses his two different personalities, saying, "I'm a split personality. Ozzy Osbourne and John Osbourne are two different people. As a kid, I was afraid of everything. And so you just crawl into your hole, you know, and you're an easy prey for bullying. So when you do find a bit of booze or dope or whatever, you go, F, I found it. And I could never get there again. Alcohol and dope and being a class clown sort of sums it all up, you know."
So his recommendation is to do alcohol and dope.
I think that's what he says. Okay. Here. No, I don't think so. The trailer also offers a few celebrity testimonials about the rocker, including producer Rick Rubin, Marilyn Manson, Post Malone, Rob Zombie, and members of Ozzy's family. Former Guns N' Roses manager Alan Niven revealed that he went to great lengths to prevent Axl Rose talking to the press by himself during the band's formative years. He said Axl would talk about Axl more than he would talk about Guns N' Roses. And in the early days, if you go back and look at this, I'd never let Axl do an interview on his own. I always made sure that there was always somebody with the band there, if not the entire band there, to keep the interviewer intimidated a little bit, maybe. And, you know, he said, try taking on four or five in one go if you want to be a wise ass. Niven, who managed the band from 87 to 91, explained, "I can see the artist's point of view. That is sometimes a pain in the ass to do the interviews. However, with that said, I think it's incumbent upon the management and the label and the artist to choose who you want to talk to and avoid the dummies, the wise asses, the gotcha guys, the snarky guys, and just brush them off and just talk to people who are going to give you an intelligent conversation." But he would never let Axl do them alone.
I can see that.
Yeah. An acoustic version of Death by Rock and Roll is now available for streaming. Pretty Reckless originally performed the special at home version of their hit single during an iHeartRadio Facebook Live session in June. But now if you want to stream it, it's a good version. I checked it out, and they have that available. And one last thing, it was 45 years ago today that many fans believe Bruce Springsteen released the single greatest rock album of the 1970s, if not in all of rock history, according to some. The legendary Born to Run was released.
I just said, hey. Born to Run, I got by accident.
Yeah.
Through the Columbia Record Club.
No kidding.
And that started my Bruce Springsteen complete immersion and adoration.
It's a great album. It was the first to feature then rock critic John Landau behind the boards alongside Springsteen's original manager, publisher, and producer, Mike Apple. It was recorded in fear that Columbia Records would drop Springsteen should the album not break the pattern of his two previous 1973 sets, Greeting from Asbury Park and The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle. Although both albums were darlings of the rock press, the albums combined had sold a paltry 90,000 copies upon initial release.
Which is not a lot.
Yeah, it was Apple who stirred up interest in the Make or Break third album by leaking copies of a rough mix of the Born to Run track to key disc jockeys in Philadelphia. I'm assuming that would have been Ed Shockey back in the day. New York, Boston, Cleveland, and other loyal markets, which bought Bruce time to work without Columbia breathing down his neck and tightening the purse strings for the long overdue follow-up.
Preston, I was feeling really down on my luck, and I felt like I couldn't get a successful album out. And then I was riding my bike through Asbury Park. An older gentleman rode up next to me, gave me lots of wisdom. He said, stick with it. You'll be a superstar. And then he disappeared. And I turned to little Steven and I said, was that guy even real?
Did you ever see him again?
No.
Wow. The main, and that happened in New Jersey.
That's yes. Crazy, man.
Same
wow.
place happened with
coincidence?
Casey.
Yeah.
Kind of a coincidence. Yeah. Huh?
The main sessions from Born to Run spanned from March to July 1975, New York City's legendary record plant East. The title track was recorded, this song right here, in 1974 at 914 Sound Studios in Blauvelt, New York.
Ah, good old Blauvelt.
I'm not familiar with Blauvelt.
I would say I just love this album. Blauvelt. And Jungle Land, I used to sit and take the speakers of the stereo and put them basically on each side of my head. And just immerse myself in the album. And it was just great. It holds up every bit.
Born to Run debuted on the album chart September 13th, 1975, at number 84. Eventually, it peaked at number 3 and then went on to sell over 6 million copies. Sensing the buzz brewing around the album, Columbia eventually poured a then whopping $250,000 in promoting Born to Run. And Bruce, much to his chagrin and Apple's delight, ended up on the cover of both Time and Newsweek during the same week that fall. Wow.
And he got that, nobody wants a headline like the new Dylan or the new, you know, when you get labeled, the new Beatles or whatever, but he did get that.
The album has the tracks Thunder Road, 10th Avenue Freeze Out, Night, and the Backstreets, and then Born to Run, She's the One, Meeting Across the River, and then closes out with Jungle Land. It's a great album. And that is what I have in music news for you this morning.
Would you say Born to Run a perfect album?
I'd have to say it's a perfect album.
Yeah.
I'd say it's one of those that, yeah, from top to bottom, it's you don't go wrong with it. All right. Are we taking a break?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're coming back. Getting ready to wrap it up. So stay close. We'll be done, deep in a Pierre shift, which we already are. We'll be right back.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Hey, we have a winner. Yay. We had a winner for Tad Tuesday. I would like to congratulate the following person because they're getting a $350 gift certificate for Floating World Tattoo and Piercing. And it's Jacob Oliver, who is from Birdsboro, Pennsylvania. And don't forget that Floating World Tattoo and Piercing is located at 1729 South Street in Philadelphia. For artwork samples, visit floatingworldtattoos.com or check them out on Instagram at Floating World Tattoos. And keep in mind, if you win this, you got to get a Preston and Steve tattoo. That's the way it works. We got to be represented.
Is that so much somewhere. To ask, right?
I don't think so. So anyhow, congrats. And thank you to our guest, Joey Fatone, was on the show today. Common Knowledge is his game show. Weeknights 5:30 on Game Show Network. Mr. Skin was on. And I really want to see this movie. It's a documentary called Skin, A History of Nudity in the Movies. And it's available on Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, Fandango, Video on Demand, anywhere else. He's a great guy, and he knows his stuff, man.
He sure does.
Michael Barkan knows his stuff. We talked Sixers and Brett Brown and Flyers and Phils and so on, so great to see him. He's going to be he's covering Phils tonight on NBC Sports Philadelphia, so make sure you check that out. And then, lastly, it was really great to have him on, character actor George Weiner from Spaceballs, Colonel Sanders, and Marvin from Fletch, and he's been in almost every TV show you can imagine from the 70s and 80s.
I was trying. It's actually more difficult to figure out what he hasn't been in.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Great. So I love speaking to people like that. So it was excellent having him on. Pierre Robert is here. Okay. How you doing, man?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Wonderful. We are doing well.
I wondered what his reaction was when you said, You were one of those people, one of those actors that people have seen in so many things that they go, that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And because there are a number of those that guys and that gal that are out there.
So much of our pop culture joy comes from people like that guy and that girl.
Right. Isn't there a movie, Preston, That Guy and the Thing?
Yeah,
yeah, it was, That Guy and the Thing.
That Guy and the Thing.
And it's all about, and they have a female, I think they made two
I think you're
movies
right.
about women.
Yeah.
And character actors, and just how you know that person. You know him when you see him. Oh, that yes. guy. Or yeah. she's in that. Yeah. And it's a really great look into the working actor and how they are just living pretty average lives as far as their means and what they get by on and their lifestyle. And they're just hoping for that next job to come along. They keep working really, really hard.
Yeah, and they work a lot if they're like yeah. if like George is, a guy who's just an everyman.
Yeah, so it was nice having him on.
Very cool.
Should we go ahead and jump right into yes. the letter? All right, let's do that. Here we go.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the Daily Letter.
And the Preston and Steve Show is brought to you today by the letter.
B as in Bravo.
Ah, and we will give away, this is really cool, a Metallica and San Francisco Symphony SNM2 box set and custom Metallica logoed violin.
Wow.
It's one of only 100 that were made. The live album and video documents the September 6th and 8th shows at San Francisco's Chase Center to be released this Friday. Pre-orders are happening now. Box set contains limited edition 4LP color vinyl.
Wow.
Exclusive photo book. Two wow. CDs, Blu-ray, sheet music.
Wow.
5 guitar picks. Wow. Poster.
Wow.
And download card.
Wow.
And the violin. It's awesome. WMMR.com for track listing and details, by the way. So we'll give that away on... Whoa. Friday, yeah.
You had to bring it back around. You went so high, you had to come out the other side.
I had nowhere to go. What's up on today's show, man?
It's going to be a wow kind of show. That's a really sweet package.
It is. Yeah. I mean, if you're a Metallica fan, and the violin, which are you know, you don't have to play it, you just play it, but it's pretty kick-ass.
I would like that violin for our hallways to display.
Yeah. Well, anyway. Be the whatever caller on.
Yeah. I can't enter. Right. That would be not proper, but we're gonna have a fun show today. But I'm perplexed because I had not realized until you mentioned that it's the anniversary of Born to Run. So I was gonna do it's Gene Simmons' birthday, so we're gonna do a block of Kiss. Gene is 97 years old today, and so we're gonna do that. We're gonna do a block of Elvis Costello. His birthday is today, and then I was thinking, well, do STP? Do I do Bruce? Or do I try to do longer Bruce on vinyl? So we're going to do something, and in some way, it'll be cool.
All right.
Okay.
I love it. I believe it'll be cool.
We'll figure it out.
I want to thank our sponsors, Preston and Steve Show, brought to you today by Dunkin', the official coffee of the Preston and Steve Show.
What? Never mind.
And right. Meineke.
Well, when you're done, come back
okay.
to me.
Meineke doing car care ride, and also...
we don't have it. Never mind. Don't come back to me.
Wilmington University. We are not going back to Pierre, but we will tell you. Tomorrow's show, we will be at Wednesday, so we go live on Fox. Good day. We'll have a secret text word, and we'll see what else we can scare up for you, my friend. That's it. We are done. Rage on. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow, gang. Bye-bye.
The Preston and Steve love you, hate you line.
You must have hated this moose.
Why don't you forget the moose for a moment?
Next message.
Kathy, happy birthday. 29 again, babe. You're looking good. We love you.
Next message.
You slow down for them. That makes no sense. You have the right of way. They yield. Throw some goddamn balls.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.